Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Annie, the radio chick, along with my co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Good afternoon, Annie. Let me tell you, Michigan right now is under major snow.
So we're
ready for the show today, especially ready for to have Ed as our fast Ed on.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm still not feeling well. I'm still under the weather here. For those that are listening, know that I've been battling bronchitis. And last Friday after the show, I ended up rushing to the hospital, were three different EKGs. They thought I was having a heart attack. Fortunately, it wasn't. But I'm back in the saddle today, still battling bronchitis, so just bear with me if I don't sound 100%. Today's guest is going to be Ed Denzel, who wrote a fantastic book called Govicide, Comply. And I was up late last night just finishing the last chapter of it, so I'm a little weary-eyed here. It's a fantastic book, and I think it's going to fall smack in really, really well with today because we have the CPAC roundtable. And Stella Lohman is over on the floor at CPAC. She's a writer for The Examiner, as well as Smart Girl Politics and a couple of other online magazines. And she has lined up, I think, about maybe three or five different people over at CPAC who will be calling in. And some of them are really fantastic guests because she left a voicemail on my cell phone. So we'll be hearing from Stella and the people she's got lined up. So I want to welcome everyone into the chat room. I see our guest is in the chat room. He's on the line right now holding to call to come on. We've got Kel in Canada. We've got Reactionary, Tesler. Hello, Tesler. Socialism is not an option. Excellent show. Got Thomas, the Invisible Conservative, who's also in the chat room and listening in. He's got also a fantastic show here on BTR. And Toddy. Toddy's in the house. So let's bring our guest on board, Ed Denzel, author of Govicide, Comply. Good afternoon, Ed.
How are you doing, Ann?
I'm holding in.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was reading your book, and as I said, I just finished it last night, and I think it's fantastic. And you have a sequel coming out for this, aren't you?
The sequel, I wrote all of the books at the same time. I would compare it to something like Lord of the Rings, where it's one story divided into three books. And this was the first third of a much larger story. The first third is the only one that's been edited so far and the only one that I've released to the public.
Uh-huh. Now, the book is not available in any bookstores, so people actually have to go online and download it, correct?
That's right. Amazon, Smashwords, the iTunes Store, a couple places.
Okay. Well, I did put a link to the book, I believe, inside on the webpage. Yes, I do. So if anyone is interested in your book, all they have to do is go to the show page and just click on the Denzel domain, and then they can download your book and read it. It is fantastic. I'm not accustomed to these e-books. I like the feel of an actual book in my hand. So reading it was a little difficult because a lot of times I'll speed read through something, and then I'll go back and reread a chapter if I want to, you know, really delve into it. So it's hard to do that with an e-book.
I understand that. However, I'm a big believer in new technology. I'm a big believer in e-books and the way they've kind of taken over publishing in the, like, the last 5 years, I guess you say. And then, with, of course, the Kindle from Amazon gets more books into more people's hands. I could tell you, if you're a big paper person reading, I can tell you my brother Brian's wife, who is a huge reader, was the same way. As soon as she got her Kindle, I don't think she's read a paper book since. And this has probably been over a year. So right now that's the way it is as far as being able to download the book. But I hope to have some hard copies out there before too long.
I'm like you. I'm new school. I like the I like the electronic type. Books to me, as somebody who I treasure, who is very close to my heart, wrote a book. I went to his book signings. I mean, he's like a brother to me. I think it was yesterday I found his book covered in a bunch of stuff in my car. I mean, e-books are and I understand, Annie, what you're saying. You like the feel of a book, sitting back in your chair, cocktail, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm like you. I like the e-books. Plus, you can pick up right where you left off. I mean, it's just so
sure.
You know, you got somebody call you while you're reading it, whatever happens. There's no where was I or putting back. It's just, I like that too.
That's right. And you can download a book within a matter of seconds. If you're going on a vacation, you don't have to stack, you know, with all the restrictions on packing and have to pay for luggage these days when you fly. You must have your Kindle. You have 3 or 4 books in there. You're covered for your all vacation.
But it's a little hard to get them autographed, though.
That's true.
Now, why don't you explain to everyone what your book is about? Because Govicide, I found the title of it in itself interesting.
Well, the Govicide, the actual word, is a word that I invented maybe 5 years ago. It was just a word that popped in to my mind just one day. I like to read. I'm a creative guy. I've been a filmmaker. And it just popped into my mind one day, and this idea of rolling back government, and there's no real word for that. And so Govicide seemed like it was like homicide is the killing of a person. Well, Govicide is like the killing of at least parts of government. And so I knew I had something there, and it just came out in 2009 that I decided I wanted to be part of this new conservative wave with the Tea Party and Obamacare, that debacle. And that was when I decided I can use that word in these books that I want to write. And that's how that came about. So I have a website that I really haven't used yet, devicide.com, but I also have the word trademarked. So it's a made-up word.
So was Michael Lockie, was that kind of just how did that come about? I mean, like names.
Well, Mike, it's just Michael Locke, just like you know, the very famous Locke who wrote the Second Treatise of Government. That's why I used that last name, Locke, L-O-C-K-E. Michael just seemed like a good run-of-the-mill name for a first name. I have a brother whose name is Michael. And so some of the names you see in the book are used for specific reasons. For example, the serial killer in the book, Gavaside Comply, his name is Hamilton. That's picked for very obvious reasons. And as a little background on the story, Michael Locke is a homicide detective in some maybe future alternative universe type of situation where the Earth is, just has one world government. And the government's main objective, its motto, is providing everything for everyone. And Michael Locke is a homicide detective within this government. However, homicide is not how we would understand it, in contemporary society, and that we're trying to protect people's rights. Homicide is seen as the lowest of the low when it comes to government departments, because the government looks at people dying as a net win, because that means it just has to get less things to less people. So other people who are living can get more stuff. And so the only reason that homicides are even investigated is to keep friends of the murdered victim, the family, happy. So yeah, they just kind of go through the motions of trying to figure out how a person has been murdered.
You know, I thought the opening was almost like you're sitting in a movie theater where you're, as you read along, you're figuring out, right off the bat when a movie starts, rarely do you just know, okay, here's where you're at, what's going on, unless they flash across it, the name of the city and the year. Here you're putting it together, and you eventually figure out, okay, it's a one-world government.
Yes.
What is taking place? I like books where you're almost like a dog chasing that bone, and it keeps moving along as the closer and closer you get to it.
I think that's an excellent analogy to what I was trying to do with this book. The reason I did it like that, where you're kind of put into something, you're not sure what's going on, is because the story is told from Michael Locke's point of view. It's not first person, but the only person in the book you really know what they're thinking is Michael. He has a girlfriend, Jade, who she talks a lot, and you can kind of guess what she's thinking, but you're not inside her head. You're not inside Hamilton's head. You're not inside Michael Locke's partner that he gets, Fiss's head. So it's a lot of trying to figure out what's going on by reading body language and by trying to analyze what the person's saying. Are they telling the truth? Are they lying? What's going on?
Thing is with Jade, too, Annie, I'm sorry if I interrupt you, but the thing with Jade is that two people have a different analogy and picture in their head of what she looks like. So I asked my friend, what would you picture her to be like? And when he described her in his head,
yeah,
complete opposite of what was in my head. That's kind of neat.
Well, I guess it is. I try to do some good descriptions. In fact, some of the reviews of the book have said that I put pictures in people's minds pretty well. But I can see how that happens. And it's not
well,
that I didn't want to get too caught up in the particulars of every person. I want to see, you know, if a woman reads this book, I want her to feel like Michael Locke is a woman. You know, I don't want to get so specific that only men can relate to the male characters and only the female can read to the female characters.
Now, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. Because one thing that annoys me about a lot of books is when they turn around and they get so descriptive, you're spending three pages just reading this stupid description. You don't do that. You basically cut straight to the chase and then concentrate on the storyline instead of all the extra little paraphernalia.
Yes. Well, I can tell you that my editor, her name is Debbie, and she is very experienced and helped me out with a lot of that. Definitely did.
All right. Well, Ed, as you know, we're doing the CPAC roundtable also. So as we're doing the interview, I'm going to have callers calling in from CPAC and from the listeners. So I'm going to bring this caller in on the line, area code 770. You're on the air live at Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
Hey, you caught me shaving while I'm driving. What's going on?
Ah,
hey,
this sounds,
Dr. Jones.
This sounds like
Dr. Jones.
Yeah, hey, what's going on, guys?
All right, we got our guest, Ed Denzel, from the book Govicide Comply, on the air live with us.
Now, I'll tell you another thing, Ed. Doc Jones is someone you want to read your book. He's not only a historian, but he is to reading books what a needle is to a drug addict. He loves books.
Yes.
He's probably read more books than I bet you your library, Doc, is bigger than the Louvre.
Well, I tell you what.
I need him to read it then.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll send you the link.
Okay. Hey, I'm headed right now I'm at Quantico right now on the road on 95, headed toward CPAC right now. I'm going to join in the festivities this afternoon, tonight, tomorrow night.
Oh, fantastic.
That'd be great.
Doc, the last time we talked to you, did you ever find a gas station? We lost you on the air. And we didn't know if you ran out of gas in the middle of nowhere or if you found a station.
No, I actually found a station. I was so enthralled in the show, seriously, that I wasn't paying attention to the gas needle, and I was way past E. You're absolutely right. And I managed to get off in some really horrible neighborhood in Richmond, and hopefully none of the listeners are in Richmond. But anyway, right now. But anyway, I got out and I was able to get some gas in just the nick of time too. So yeah, I'm good.
Good, good. Ed, I got another question. If it's okay, my question is, when you were writing the book, when you actually wrote, as you said, you wrote three and kind of divided them up. Did you ever think about maybe publishing, kind of doing the Star Wars thing? Or maybe publishing the middle book before the first, or something along those lines.
No, not at all. I was just all I was concentrating on was getting to the end, making it as good as possible, and getting as many people as possible to read it. I never thought of something like that.
I think people in politics, one world government, really attracts them to your book, because I think for many of us, when we see a big picture of where government is going, we tend to think that. So it's more, as I was saying earlier, with the, pulling the dog along with the bone. It's just there's many aspects of intrigue here.
Right. Well, so. I started out with a kind of theme, because people, I think, when they think about, like, a one-world government, they think that, that's crazy or something like that. And my supposition for this book was that what would happen if all of the governments in this world, whether it is far to both extremes, from the United States, the whole way over to like North Korea, everything in between, what if every government just decided the reason they existed was to give people stuff? Healthcare, cars, houses, whatever else. There would be no need for borders anymore. And so that was kind of my supposition. And what would happen if that happened? And that's how I came up with this world.
Now, that's very interesting because you're talking about giving everything to the people from government, such as healthcare. Just as I was preparing for the show, my husband passed me in the hallway and he said, "Did you hear about them giving cell phones to everyone?"
Yes, I read that. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it clicked in the back of my head. Well, I'm thinking, they did that 2 years ago. Anyone that was on welfare or food stamps or whatever, they were giving away these cell phones so that everyone had a phone. And thinking, we've already started this. And Obamacare wasn't the start of it. It started long before.
No. Yes, it did. Of course it did. Sure. Yes. That was where I started. That was one of the first ideas that I came up with when I was putting this story together. And with this, the first part, this first book really explores is when government, its main goal is to give people stuff, whether it's material things or services, eventually somebody is going to become a slave. It's inevitable. Somebody is going to be forced to do something. The doctor is going to be forced to be a slave to the patient. The customer, the seller becomes a slave to the buyer. And that's a little bit what specifically this first book is about.
Well, it's already true then, because already in Obamacare, they're mandating that the doctors have to do these treatments. They are mandating the type of pay. They're mandating the training and everything else through Obamacare. Everything has already been mandated, so they've actually already made a slave class.
Yep. Well, this is a book that takes place, like I said, and if you want to say the future, I don't want to give too much away, alternative universe. But, yes, I wanted to obviously relate it to what is going on, not just in the United States, but across the world in the year 2012. Of course, I started writing this in 2010, but it's 2012 now.
Wow. Now, I just want to let Doc Jones know, who is listening in. I'm getting some feedback from his end, so I've got to put him on mute. I don't know if Doc Jones wants to try to call back in again because I got a bad connection on him. Just to let you know, Ed, Doc Jones actually was, I think, I may have this right or wrong, but with Tom Clancy, he was the chief researcher in his books.
Wow.
So Doc Jones is someone you definitely want to make sure gets your book and reads it.
That's impressive. I'm a huge fan of Tom Clancy. In fact, one of my favorite movies of all time is The Hunt for Red October. So
one of the things I like about you already, Ed, is that many times when you have people who have written books, they're very bad people to interview. You've already, you're very personable. It is. Because a lot of times they're using words nobody knows what the hell they're saying. So 5 minutes into the interview, you're thinking, oh, God, we got a whole hour to go? I mean, usually you think that writers would love to talk. And sometimes they answer with one-word answers, like, well, tell us about your book. Well, it's a good book.
Yeah, I understand that. I've heard some interviews like that. For me, I just have a few passions in my life, and I can talk about those things probably for hours. And one of those things is conservatism, and that's what my book's about. So I can't talk about it. Now, if you get me off on some other topic, I might be more of a listener than a talker.
All right. Now, Doc Jones, you're back in on the air live, and now you've got a good connection.
Hey, well, thank you. Look, I've often had taken issue with the idea of there ever being a one-world government or anything one world on the planet that we live in, given the fact that our history has proven that men, world leaders, can't seem to agree on anything. And I can't imagine any man who would consider himself to be a leader, especially a leader of his own nation, putting his own ego aside, at the very least, and acquiescing or submitting to a one-world body, submitting his government, his nation. I just don't think that the human nature lends itself to a one-world anything.
Okay, Ed?
What I would say is that I think that they would acquiesce to that if they got to remain in power, if they got to retain some of their power, if they got to do special things that the rest of the people couldn't. That's all I would say to this. Like I said, it's a fiction book. There's a lot of things that are based in reality. But I think that if you look at the world overall, I think that we're going more toward government giving stuff to people than the opposite. I would think that it'd be at least conceivable.
Well, you know, as a metaphysical or philosophical argument, I couldn't agree that for example, Sarkozy would submit to Merkel, and a real American president, not the one we currently have, would like a Ronald Reagan would say, okay, you know, we're going to submit the United States to a one world government. I'll be the secretary of whatever. You know, in this one world government, Andrea Merkel will be the president, and Nicolas Sarkozy will be the, you know, secretary general or something like that. I can't imagine the egos of men being such that, and the pride that nations have established over the course of the decades or centuries, be just laid aside to become a part of, you know, a small fish in a big pond? Why not be the biggest fish?
That's fair. What I would say is that you have to remember something. When it comes to conservatism and how it is in the United States, when it comes to the world population, we are in the severe minority. The kind of movement that we have in the United States when it comes to believing in our Bill of Rights, or rights, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, that is a minority compared to the rest of the world. And so when you it would be like 5% of the world population compared to all the people in China, all the people in India, and
right,
everywhere else. So if it were to come down to that, I don't know what they would do with us.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's enough people just here in the United States who believe that the government, its role is for safety, and its role is to give things to people. I'm not so sure that we wouldn't be drowned out, or they might just get rid of us permanently. And that's why the Tea Party has come about. That's why this radio show exists. That's why I wrote this book, to try to fight that back against, you know, that tsunami that is out there.
Also, Ronald Reagan's been dead, Doc Jones. We got a president now who doesn't love this country like we like. So actually, in a lot of ways, that book is closer to rolling in the right direction, fact, than it would be science or fiction.
Oh, and I agree. And no one's sorrier than I am that Ronald Reagan is gone, or we don't even have anybody even close to him right now. I do not take issue with the premise of the book. I have not read it, but I suspect it's going to be a great read. Bear in mind, my issue is with the idea of America or any other nation that has a strong leader submitting himself or his nation to a one world government. I don't think that men are made that way. It's kind of like, okay, well, yeah, there are men out there who share their wives, you know, with another dude. But the more of us who will, you know, we're not going to share our wives. You can't, no thanks. You know, and I think that, you know, metaphysically speaking, you know, my nation is like my wife, and you can't have her. You know?
Okay.
Is
there 7 billion people in the world right now? Something like that. I think we just clicked over 7 billion. 6.8 billion of them believe the governments exist to give stuff to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's easy to see how that momentum, if it was strong enough to stop that many people going in that direction, would be very difficult.
How many people in our own country, in the United States right now, believe that?
Yeah.
A good many people.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thought towards the one world government. Don't we already have that starting with the European Union?
Well, they've tried it. It hasn't worked out so well, but I don't dismiss that they might not try it again.
All right,
and especially since they see that Europeans, especially people in Eastern Europe who love the United States so much, see us going in the direction of Western Europe, they might definitely be motivated to try it once again, being that we're kind of going in their direction. We're kind of meeting them in the middle.
Well,
that's very true.
I believe that, you know, that trend is a temporary one. A lot of us, you know, romanticize, for lack of a better word, that President Obama will, you know, attempt to engineer a sort of coup where he remains president, you know, for life or something like that. But in reality, you know, chances are he's going to be gone, you know, by November. And if for some reason we are, you know, we're stuck with him for 4 more years, it's an 8-year reign at best. And, you know, and then he's going to be gone. And whoever comes in after him, the way the Constitution is set up, has the power to overturn almost anything that the previous president has done. So, it's a trend. Yeah, we're moving toward that trend with the current regime, if you will, but it can all be reversed. You know, I find that, you know, we have gone, the nations have gone to war over much less. If it were so easy to assimilate nations into one bigger nation, you know, we wouldn't have had wars like World War I or II, all the conflicts that have gone on over the world where we're fighting each other for almost no apparent reason. I don't see any reason why a nation will say, you know what, no, you know, I'm not with this program. You know, we want to maintain our sovereignty. You know, it's a matter of pride. And it just won't, I mean, and yeah, you're absolutely right. There's so many more of other, so many, you know, the population of the world is so vast that America would be drowned out. But America would, in fact, have allies as they did during World War I and World War II. I don't think America would stand alone if we have the right leadership in place. Go ahead.
I think to say that it's just America is too broad, I think you have to narrow it down. I think we have too many liberals in this country. I think we have too many people who don't care about politics. And so you'd really have to narrow it down. There's a lot of people, like I said, liberals and people who just don't care, period, who don't vote at all. They'd rather do whatever else they're doing in their lives that they think is more important. You'd have to narrow that down to conservatives, hardcore conservatives, like Tea Party people. And that even gets a smaller subset of America. You know, it'd be like 1,000-to-1 ratio or something like that.
Okay, we got another caller here on the line, Thomas, who's the invisible conservative on BTR. Thomas, you said you had a question.
Yeah, I had a question, but sitting here reading what's in the chat room, it always gets me when we give so much credit to our enemies as if we don't have the ability to counteract. Never mind the fact there are those of us that has the ability, but we sit back twiddling our thumbs and all we do is just talk about it. So my question to you, Ed, which you kind of answered in your last dialogue, what are we going to do about it if we see things going in the direction that we're going? You have to understand, which I know you do, that's why people are trying to take our guns away, because they know that we as Americans are getting pissed off. We're getting fed up. Me as an American, what I'm getting fed up with is conservatives and hand-wringing. Folks, we have the ability to do something about it. Let's get off our butts and go kick butts, knock heads, and take our country back. Let's stop all the hand-wringing, because we're not defeated yet.
It's funny you bring this up, because I just wrote a blog, I guess blogged on americaisconservative.blogspot.com last week, and I wrote about this very subject. What I said was that it's just not good enough to be conservative anymore. It's just not good enough to show up every 2 to 4 years and vote conservative or vote Republican, whenever that means to you. More people have to stop being customers of conservatism and be espousers of conservatism and be teachers of conservatism, instead of just, you know, listening to this show or reading Sean Hannity's new book or Ann Coulter's new book and say, oh, that's cool, and they're just consumers of it. You have to start passing it along,
right?
You know, and that's the way you fight against it, instead of just treating it as entertainment.
Right.
And that's because that's where I came to in my life a few years ago, that I've detailed elsewhere, that I discovered that I just didn't want to ride the wave of conservatism. I wanted to be the water. You know?
And that's a very interesting way of putting it, because like you, a number of years ago when the Tea Party started, a group of us, just a handful of us, five of us, met in a living room, having never met each other before. We formed the Tea Party here in Beaufort. And from there on, you know, things have just risen. And I've gone from doing that to doing this show to get the word out, to get other people out there to join the conversation. And without the conversation, nothing's going to happen. You've got to take that first step to make the conversation start.
And as I said in that blog, a lot of times we conservatives, we shoot ourselves in the foot. I'm a product of public education. I went to Leechburg Area High School. But when I went to college, I went to one of the most conservative schools in the world. It's the lesser known Hillsdale. It's called Grove City College. It's in Grove City, Pennsylvania. I graduated from there with a degree in business. But too many conservatives are letting their kids go to public school, and then they go to a public university, and all it does, it gets these kids' minds filled with the enemy. It gets them filled with liberalism. And so we as conservatives, we have to work twice. To us who are out here doing radio shows and writing everything, we have to work twice and three times and four times as hard just to get those people back who should be on our side in the first place.
Amen.
That's true. That's true.
That
we got
is
another
so
call.
Very true.
We got another caller coming in who's Toddy. Toddy, good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Okay. I just, since Thomas said something and you said go ahead and call and I'll do it, and it's just like, and it's perfect because Ed just went right to it. I couldn't have asked for it to go a better way. That in 1848 is when the manifesto was done, the Communist Manifesto by Marx and Engels. In 1857 is when the National Education Association formed. And that was the beginning of undermining this nation with communist principles. This has been going on a long time, and many Americans have not been willing to get involved, not been willing to do anything. And many times it's because they didn't think the national government could go that far. They thought the constitutional limits automatically apply. They don't. And even in the Federalist Papers, you had Hamilton saying, "We can't. There's no way we can make them follow the parchment in the future." So this is where we are, and we're not active enough in the sense of figuring out how to enforce this instrument on government other than thinking of our vote. And therein lies where I feel we're withdrawn and we're not doing what we need to do to be the sovereign power of this nation, which we are. We instituted this government. That constitution was our decision. Government didn't institute us. And that's where I see conservatives in a very difficult position, because they keep letting these progressive arguments and all this other stuff draw us into things that have nothing to do with our country.
Now, that's interesting, Toddy, because I think the CPAC convention that's going on is the heart of that matter right now. Conservatives turning around saying, listen, we've got to turn around, take our government back, put the Constitution back in place. I think the CPAC is a perfect example of us moving forward and trying to adhere to a constitutional government.
Well, I would agree that the basis of CPAC is, but here they are applauding Romney, who is far from anything of a conservative.
Exactly,
no, it is
Mike.
Not. No, the bottom line is, if this took place back then, Romney would have been chased out of there with pitchforks and shovels. And the bottom line is, we need to give zero tolerance, zero. Not even allow them to even take a look at us unless they believe in the principles which Thad Conley and many others have preached on this show, as well as, you know, this is a book that in many, many aspects of the globe, parts of it are unfolding, or at least are attempting to unfold. So, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand that if we don't pay a lot more attention, if we don't get involved, what we think is not possible, what is science fiction or nonfiction, what have you, will take place.
That's true. Now, I'm going to use an example of something that just happened today. And this is something you also address in your book, Ed, about right to life.
Yes.
Just today.
Yeah, it's a major, the right to life is a major topic in the first book, yes.
Right. But just today, just before the show started, about an hour before, President Obama went on air and started to rescind part of that policy that Sebelius put forward about mandatory contraceptive and abortion procedures with the Catholic Church. And he did a huge backstep on that one, where he's saying, all right, we're going to turn around and mandate that the health care insurer let the women know these services are available. We're not going to mandate that they be provided through the employer, but let the insurer then directly approach the individual one-on-one. Here's another thing about that. Why are we providing free contraceptives? Isn't that a personal choice? That's not a health care issue.
We shouldn't be fighting any of it. The government shouldn't be involved in either side when it comes to reproduction. We shouldn't be involved in providing contraception, and we shouldn't be having any sort of health care where the government is providing even births. You know, that should be between the doctor, the hospital, and the woman who's going to have birth, or, you know, the woman who is protecting herself against getting pregnant. It's not the government's business.
Amen.
And can I interject here why Obama did this?
Well, what your opinion is why he did it. Yeah, go ahead. And you know, Patty, you're always welcome to call, whether you're in the topic or not. Go ahead.
For me, it's why he did it because of knowing who he is. And if anybody who knows who he is, that's what they'll come to conclude if they'll look. What it comes down to, I just put up a link in the chat room. This is the Catholics' problem with Romney Care in Massachusetts, the fact that it paid for abortion. Okay? Obama just one-upped Romney so that when they get to a general election, if Romney wins, he gets to say that he at least accommodated the Catholic Church and Romney didn't. So that's his reason. Obama doesn't care about anything else. It's about him being elected. That's all he ever does is run for election.
Okay. Now, we got another caller coming in. Let's see if this is coming in from CPAC. Area code 612, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
Hey, it's Reactionaries.
Hi, Reactionary. How are you doing?
Another fabulous day here in the frozen Midwest.
Whereabouts are you in the frozen Midwest? I'm in Detroit area.
People's Republic of Minnesota.
Oh, geez, you probably got it worse than we got.
Yeah, it's just cold, not snowing.
Okay, Reactionary. Hang on just a second. We got another call coming in. Like I said, I'm waiting for some people to call in from the floor of CPAC. This is area code 772. You're on the air live with Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
This is Tesla, Annie.
Hi, Tesla. How are you doing?
Very good.
Okay. Our roundtable is really, really rounding up. And I know Thomas has been hemming and hawing back there. Thomas, your mic is open, so if you have a comment, jump in.
Yes, this is my comment. My biggest thing, because I didn't take issue with anything that Toddy or anyone else said, but one of the greatest things that we as conservatives have down pat, I mean, we are the masters of it, lock, stock, and barrel. We can talk about the problem. No one seems to want to figure out a solution. We know what's going on, and this is what, you know, and this is what I'm talking about like when Toddy posted the things about history, the Communist Manifesto. Once we know that, once we have that information, now the question should be, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to just keep getting together in our, you know, in our rallies, which there's nothing wrong with that, or are we going to engage the enemy and say, you know what, we're awake now, so you're going to listen to what we have to say, or we're going to stop you? That's just the kind of person I am, because I love this country as much as everyone else, but I'm the kind of person, because of where I've lived and what I've seen, you know what? I'd be willing to fight for this country physically in any other way that I would have to, intellectually. Like Toddy, Toddy is off the chain when it comes to his intelligence. He's smarter than Obama.
Cut
so
it
we need to utilize these weapons in... Anyway.
You just insulted Toddy, saying smarter than Obama. That's not going too far.
Toddy?
How's
Once again, I'm having trouble breathing for a minute because I've been laughing too hard. I can't just can't believe it. It's just funny. I'm just a researcher. I just go to the library. I used to spend a lot of time in law libraries. That's all I did, and
but
I did it. You know, that's it.
But
well, you know,
maybe
when Ed writes the next book, there'll be a Potty, there'll be a cool Mike, there'll be an Annie, there'll be a Thomas, a Dr. Jones, and a Tesla. We'll all be one big happy family.
Anything's possible.
All right, Ed.
If I could add something to that, is that, you know, when we talk about, you know, what can we do and everything, it has to start with our fellow conservatives. Like I said before, that if you have fellow conservatives who are sending their kids to public school and public universities, and these, you know, their kids are taking all these crap classes and everything,
right?
I think you got to gild them a bit. I'm not saying, you know, or anything. I think you have to. You know,
right.
If you know, and now I live down here in Madeira Beach, Florida. It's beautiful, by the way, today, just to rub that in. But if you know, like, anybody who works for the federal government, and they're working in some, you know, three-letter, you know, a regulation-enforcing department that we know is unconstitutional, you got to ask them, what are you doing? It has to start there, because those are the people that should be the easy low fruit, you know, that we
right.
can start to change some of this. I mean, if liberalism is intent on bankrupting this country and running it into the ground, then we have to bankrupt liberalism first.
Amen. That's what I'm talking about.
And how do we bankrupt it, okay?
Taking part in it.
What I'm getting at is, if you look at what they've done, look at the people and look at how we are, and in general, look at the people right now. Most of them, what's the problem? They don't think there's a future. They
right.
don't think there's anywhere to go. There's this idea that whatever I do, it's just going to be taxed. They've assumed the government is using powers it's supposed to have. They have no clue. It's amazing. They don't even realize the Constitution is there to be enforced on the government and doesn't grant them right one.
Right.
How do you? I've been working for a long time to try and help people understand these things, but it's very difficult to do. And this is where our biggest problem is, to me, and what I've proposed this before, is we need a process by which we start to enforce the Constitution on government. And I'm not talking about civil rights lawsuits or something like that, but something where we're actually the power. And that's what's important. Now, I'll give you an idea. I found one little thing, one little way that I think it can be enforced. And that is, they have this thing in the civil rights thing called the Administrative Procedures Act, where you basically make a claim, and if they deny it, they've waived immunity. And I figured out that we could maybe use that to go and file writs and force and use the court system to force them to do things. Now, if we take on that role, where we either force them to do something or prohibit them from doing something, we've begun a process where we're actually enforcing our Constitution. Another option is the Article 5, you know, the convention stuff about amending the Constitution. We don't even have to comply with that because we're not even mentioned. It was done as a hurdle for government in amending our Constitution because it belongs to us. We're the ones who have to take on this role. We should be moving, having conventions in our states, Tea Party or what have you, inviting others to actually formulate what we'd actually like to have either amended or to move our states to do something. We're not
right.
doing a lot of things we could do because we don't realize how much power we really have.
Right.
Well,
and
Annie? Go ahead.
Yeah, Annie, this is Tesla.
Okay.
You know, I'm listening to your guests very, very carefully, and I have to ask a question. Is your guest, in fact, a Ron Paul supporter?
Ed?
No, I'm not a Ron Paul fan. No, I'm not.
And who are you supporting for president?
On my site, The Dense Domain, which I do podcasts every day, I am of the four. If you got to pick one of the four, I have to say that I'm with Newt Gingrich. I mean, you know,
yep.
That's where I am.
Okay, good.
But you're not going to get me to go on for like 10 minutes while he absolutely 100% should be the nominee. Let's put it that way.
That's fine. I can respect that. At least it wasn't Ron Paul as your number one man. That would have made
Tesler,
a whole different dynamic as far
Tesler,
as I'm concerned.
What is your problem with Ron Paul, Tesler? I would think you would love Ron Paul.
Oh, no. Mike, you did not.
I had to do it,
Annie. Well, now, Annie's show is only 2 hours.
Tesler,
okay.
Let me help you out here.
First of all, let's deal with the issue, of course, that Ron Paul is a person who is not in favor of good foreign policy. There's a difference. He would pull back all our borders and tell everybody to go home and leave us alone. Now, that's ridiculous. That is stupid, and we know that doesn't work in today's world. Second thing, Ron Paul is not a social conservative. He likes gay people. He likes lesbians. He likes people who smoke. I don't like conservatives I don't particularly care for political candidates who are not socially conservative. That's only part of my issue.
Tesler, let me help you out here. Let me break it down to you like this. Ron Paul is not – you say he's not socially conservative? Ron Paul's not fiscally conservative. Ron Paul is not a conservative. All you have to do is look at his voting records, which I have, over his 20 years in Congress. Guess what? Ron Paul graded out further to the left than Barack Obama.
Yes.
Okay.
I can accept those points. I really do. I don't understand why he's even on a Republican ticket. I really don't. Except for one thing. It is a bunch of people who are intentionally trying to dismantle the Republican, the conservative cause in America with people
exactly.
like Ron Paul.
Exactly.
They're intentionally trying to do it. These people are not social conservatives. These people are anti anything we believe in as a country. And
exactly.
they have no yeah. Don't get me going.
Well,
yeah.
I'll just, you know, since we're all piping up on Ron Paul, I've got a number of articles, but I just put in the link to the one where I explain how he's a socialist, okay? And nobody
mm-hmm.
would ever call him that, but I found he's a socialist. I've
mm-hmm.
as far as his lies about his newsletters, I found he's a racist, or at least supports racism.
Right. He's a racist.
He's got some problems. He's some serious problems. And frankly, he just hasn't been honest. Did you guys catch him on the Huckabee Forum? It was amazing. They were asking him questions, the three attorneys generals, on the first Huckabee Forum, and two questions about the Constitution. And it was his eyes were like saucers as he was trying to figure out how to make this about the Federal Reserve. And when he couldn't, he had
exactly.
no answer.
Yes.
See?
Okay.
So,
we'll agree. Ron Paul is an enigma within this election cycle.
He's kept us from having a conservative for 20 years.
Well,
for 20 years.
As we drop this subject, I'll just say, well, Annie, mission accomplished. Tesler, the whole goal, I said, I messaged Annie, I says, watch me get Tesler going.
Yeah, I kind of read the big neon sign as soon as I heard you talk. I said,
it is very true.
Okay.
The book the book's conclusion of one world order. Realistically, if Ron Paul had his way of pulling back our borders, basically those type of things do happen because we're not in other places protecting other countries. And protecting the states of America from invasion is not only a constitutional duty, it is explicit that the borders of these countries, it doesn't stop at the four borders. It does stretch across the Atlantic and across the ocean.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt there, Annie. Go ahead.
All right, no, let's get back to Ed's book, Governcide, Comply.
Mm-hmm.
Ed,
it's been great, guys. I really enjoyed the conversation. It's been excellent.
Excuse me. As you can tell, sometimes things go a little odd here. I want to welcome everyone into the chat room. The chat room's going lively. We've got a lot of new people that have jumped in there. We got Gopher Fan. We got John Ruberer, who's also known as the Marathon Pundit, who's excellent. Kelly, our friend from Canada, is in there. Our LSU girls are also in the house. We've got Wendy. We've got Patriot Greg. We got Sarah. Sexy Sammy's in here. Want to welcome everyone in there. Also, our white punk on dope. I love this guy. And as you know, things can go a little oddball here. So I want to welcome you, our author, Ed Denzel, author of the book, Govicide Comply. It's a book that you can download. There's a link on the show page that you can download the ebook for free. Oh, man, Ed, this is nuts. Now, on your book, you had a symbol. And our our hero here, Michael Locke, thought it was a U. And you had me puzzled about that. And all of a sudden, I came up with a whole mess of answers on what that U stood for. And at one point, I thought it meant, you know, I thought you were probably going to morph it into the Alpha Omega using a God symbol. But what you hit me with on that one, I said, I didn't even see that one coming. And I'm not going to tell the
well,
listeners.
Well, we don't want to let any of the listeners know what it is, because I think that was a really cool part of the book. That was something that I had planned from the beginning. And it definitely falls into conservatism and the role of limited government in everybody's lives.
I'm sorry, I had to mute myself for a second. I'm still fighting this bronchitis, so sorry about that. No, I think everyone has to read that. And like I said, that symbolism that you used, I thought was absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you.
But I want Mike to jump in on this one. Mike, I lost my co-host.
Flying solo.
I tell you what, while we're waiting for Mike, I am pissed that this chocolate original Chex Mix doesn't have any damn M&Ms in it. And they're right here on the bag, and I've been searching for M&Ms, and I have not found one.
You got a bag of Obama M&Ms.
No, I have a bag of chocolate. Is that a racist remark when I said chocolate? You racist? That's racist.
Well, you know, Doc Jones, it wouldn't be the first time on BTR you've been called a racist, not only by other people, but an awful lot of black people as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
Need a new government regulation.
Wait. Time out. Isn't Doc Jones black himself?
Huh?
That's Perry Steele. I don't know.
I said, isn't Doc Jones black himself?
Sometimes.
Okay, so I thought, according to liberals, that black people can't be racist.
Well, that's what I heard, but I've heard that all. I've heard that all my life. Black people can't be racist. And you know what? I have asked, well, why not? And I haven't yet, in my 50 years on this planet, to actually receive an answer.
I've got a good one. Well,
really, let me have it.
Because black people are not in a position of power. It's the white man. Well, if that's the case, you idiot, why are you voting for the Democratic Party, the very party who enslaved you? Hello?
I think it's Tesla's fault, my friend. Myself, I think it's Tesla's fault.
Blame him.
You might as well blame me.
Okay.
I was listening to something this morning that most people don't realize, and I knew it, but I didn't know it myself until recently. That black people were allowed to vote in the South until the Democrats came along.
Bingo.
You know, after the Civil War.
Yep.
That is true. That is true.
Everything. Yes.
Well, that was, once again, it goes back to Ed's point, is that the conservative needs to really take the bull by the horns. As a graduate here of a private school, I have seen an awful lot of our Catholic schools close due to the simple fact that there has been a lack of commitment that my parents had as far as educating their kids in a conservative, fiscally and monetarily type environment, and enforcement of that belief. And, you know, realistically, if you think about it, a teacher or teachers have an amazing influence on a child, just like a little puppy when you bring them home. And sometimes by the time it's 12, 13, it may be too late to turn the tide because that little puppy or that child has already been influenced in an incredibly liberal manner where what Ed said, or what Toddy said, people don't realize what rights we have under the Constitution because they're taught that people are derived from the federal government and not that government is derived from us, we the people.
Right. You know, this whole thing with the Catholic Church and what has gone on in the last couple of weeks regarding contraception, and the fact is, and I was raised Catholic. First Communion, Confirmation, I was a church organist. That was my job in high school. Once I started driving when I was 16, that was my high school job before I went to college. So I was raised Roman Catholic. But the truth is that the Catholic Church has been playing patty cake with the federal government for too long now. You know, besides though them being against, against contraception and being against abortion and being for strong, you know, for marriage for man and woman, it's a liberal organization. You know, and it just
that
is
a good point.
I can remember.
I grew up in Leech, Pennsylvania.
Hang on, guys. One at a time here.
Catholic Church is not a liberal organization. If you know Catholic faith, you know better than to say something like that.
Well, Doc, I'm gonna take an issue with you because again, here I was raised Catholic, extremely, and at one point, believe it or not, I almost became a nun. But the more I got into the Catholic Church and everything else, I am going to agree. I found a lot of liberal leanings within the Catholic hierarchy and a lot of the things that they were putting out there and promoting. That is one of the reasons why I'm no longer a practicing Catholic. I had too many issues with it, and it rubbed against my conservatism to the point where I've actually backed away from the church. And I think a lot of other Catholics here can also answer the same way. Ed, what would your response be?
I think that the Catholic Church believes in the redistribution of income. I believe that it thinks that government should have a role in taking from one person. And even though it does its own charity, I believe that it believes in that. I think it sees the poor in this country as the victims of the rich.
As I've ever heard about the Catholic faith. The Catholic faith has got nothing to do with the redistribution of wealth. Nothing whatsoever. Now, Barack Obama and the liberal Catholics would like you to believe that. I'll grant you that. And unfortunately, you've been fed a bill of goods that are wrong, that is completely wrong. That's not what the Catholic faith is all about. Believe me, it's not.
Here's what I know about the Catholic Church. I'm from Leechburg, Pennsylvania. It's where they used to have a Catholic youth center there. When you would walk into the lobby of it, you'd see a picture of Jesus Christ. You'd see a picture of, and to one side would be John Paul II. So this would have been around 1983, 84, because I'm 41 years old. And to the right of that would be the picture of John F. Kennedy in the same, like, trilogy of it. Catholic Church has been aligned with Democrats for a long time now. You know, which to me, that's sacrilegious to me. And I was 13, 14, 15 at the time and thought it was strange.
I couldn't agree with you more, except the problem is that the Catholic Church, the real Catholic Church in America, not so much in the rest of the world, which is so bizarre, but in America, the Catholic Church is not fundamentally correct. Now, when it comes to issues within the Catholic faith of certain, for example, birth control, okay, that is an absolute dogma of the church. You can't get around it. You can't say, well, I sort of like, either you are a Catholic and you oppose birth control, or you are a Catholic who supports birth control and therefore you're not a Catholic. People don't understand what the real religion is all about. And you've got too many people like the Kennedy family. You have too many people like Nancy Pelosi. You have too many people like your Vice President of the United States who are Catholic in name only. They're cafeteria Catholics, and they don't have a clue about what the religion is all about.
All right, Tesla, hang on just a second on that one, because when you mention those names, you got to remember also Nancy Pelosi and John Kerry also promoted, you know, abortion. And
absolutely.
According to the Catholic Church, they should have been excommunicated. But the Catholic Church has not. Catholic Church has not made a stand on that. They still allow them to attend church, still give them communion, because the Catholic Church here in the United States
You have no argument here for me. What the media in America does not explain to you is that there are many Catholics in high, high levels, bishops and cardinals, who would agree with you. But the politics of the church is so ugly that they will not excommunicate people that should be excommunicated, like Nancy Pelosi.
All right, Tesla, hang on just a second on this one. Hang on just a second, because I think Ed was trying to jump in on this. Ed?
The only thing I would say to that, seeing the church up close and not just being a parishioner but a worker within it, I can tell you, I knew the three priests when I worked for the church, from being an altar boy to being an organist, they were all liberal.
I live in a cathedral, by the way. My mother, who watches EWTN and makes rosaries, on and on and on. The problem is the Catholic Church in general. Tesla is right about the actual religion and its individual beliefs. But like the federal government, which is supposed to be mandated by a constitution, when you are infiltrated by just thousands and thousands of liberals in powerful positions, things change. Here's a perfect example, is that the Catholic Church is probably the biggest profiteer of abortion on the planet. They form the Right to Life groups at the local, state, and federal levels, and they rake in a bundle. Do you mean to tell me that they'd really like to see all those millions and millions and millions and billions through the years go away? Of course not. That's why when George Bush had a so-called conservative House and Senate in 2000 to 2006, you never heard a peep out of them as far as trying to overturn Roe versus Wade or challenging, because it's become so infiltrated with cash, money, that this is the corruption we see. This is where we see Republicans look like Democrats, because the money.
All right, go ahead, Toddy.
Well, I'll just throw in here that I understand where you're coming from on the money, and I mean, we got all these different things, but I'll just throw this here. The Catholic Church originally was a power in Europe. They actually were the ones who would basically ordain the king after they were put on the throne, per se, and if they didn't agree with them, they didn't have power, essentially. And that was, and the Catholic Church was made up of about 80% of the bishops were also nobles under the crown. So you had a very intricate politic, okay? So they had power like that once. So keep that in mind. That's their history. The second thing is that government in America is what corrupted the church. They've forced churches to register as corporations and have to meet certain criteria, constantly putting new rules and regulations on them that have bent them into a more left-leaning or left-regulated organization. And a perfect example of that would be abortion. And for the third thing, Roe v. Wade is how you ended up with a church that suddenly had to get on a political position to try and bring about and reinstate a sense of morality and moral authority. But the government is what instigated that, not the church.
No,
so
that's interesting.
Couple things.
I guess the thing is, though, some other, denominations of Christianity, like evangelicals, that, you know, although they've, you know, you don't hear that word as much now, it was a big topic when George Bush was president, they've managed to stay pretty conservative, though.
Because,
you know,
and
they tend to be
more individualistic and not as organized, so you're absolutely correct. I mean,
Tyler, let Ed finish on this one. Ed, go ahead.
All I was going to say is I think that their churches in the United States are corporations as well, but they haven't given into it. So there's really no reason for the Catholic Church to give in like that if they did.
Now, that's interesting, because I found, you know, having grown up being Catholic, and I mean, you cannot get any more Catholic than an Italian, German Roman Catholic. And my grandparents were such staunch Democrats, but every time I challenged them on the Democratic issues, I said, well, aren't you for X, Y, Z? And they say, yeah, but then why are you a Democrat? Because the church is telling me to vote Democrat. And that's the whole thing. With the Catholic Church in America, they have become involved in politics by swinging to the left. And mm-hmm. that is what I take issue with. And it's also something I'm finding with a lot of Southern Baptists here. Also, they're swinging to the left, even though their dogma is to the right. And they're doing it for political reasons.
Well, I'll just say this. Remember what I said. They once had power. So that's why I said that. That's why I brought that up first. The reason that they will go and do the corporate thing and succumb, if you will, is for the idea that they can retain a certain level of political power because they have a certain amount of wealth, because they have a certain amount of a following. And they're using that. In other words, it's a form of lobbying for them. And on the idea that they would be able to have a certain level of power within the lobbying for these particular issues that others won't have because they're less organized. So that's their advantage, and they come from a political history. So that's why I brought that up in the first place.
Keep in mind that, yes, I mean, it is a church, and Tesler is right in what he said about the basis of the church, but it is also a huge corporate business that is tied in with everyone. They are the biggest real estate landholders. They hold more deeds than any business or company on the globe, on the planet. And with that, politics comes into play into all of this. And so I think the point is taken. Like our Constitution, it limits government.
And the thing is, they've embraced a lot of this stuff to their own detriment.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. And we
now have people are leaving. People are leaving the church. They're finding they're going to non-denominational churches. I know my parents. My mother is Roman Catholic. My dad isn't, but he would go to mass with her. My parents don't. They go to church, but they don't go to Catholic church anymore.
Well, but people have come and gone to churches left and right. Half of the population of the Catholic Church were not born Roman Catholics. So people do come and go. The bottom line is, getting back to our main aspect of the topic, which, by the way, this is a great show today, I think that basically when you become too big, what happens is there's just too much, you lose focus of too much because you're just too huge. One pope has no idea what's going on in Atlanta, Georgia. On top of that, Moscow, Beijing, Brazil. It's just too big, and it becomes a one-world government.
I was waiting for that.
Well, we can't forget the current pope, and his name escapes me right now. You know, he did come out against
Benedict.
against the United States military and what we were trying to do, in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I know that there are some conservatives that said we shouldn't go there, but it's not the overriding conservative opinion. You know, so it kind of jumps into politics, and I know it's just the leader, but he could have said nothing, and it would have been just fine. But he had to infuse himself into it.
Well, that's because more than likely, what has eventually happened is the people who are in control got their way with the president, and they got their way with this pope. So more than likely, there is somebody above them pulling the strings. And like it or not like it, I am a very still devout Roman Catholic, although I disagree with much of the church. We do have a pope, like it or not like it, who has been raised with the values that fear us the most, and that is those of probably one of the most ruthless people to rule this planet ever. Next to Stalin is Hitler. That doesn't mean he's a Nazi, but what I am saying is they were in bed with that type of teachings. A gangbanger who is at 10 and 12 and 15. It's very hard to change them at the age of 18. And then you have Obama. Then you have the other leaders that are in place that all agree on the majority of the aspects. That's called disaster.
For consistency, okay, that what you just described is basically when the feudal system and the oppressive form of communism, or if you want to call it that, or fascism, or whatever you want to say, all of these are the same thing. So the church isn't really deviating from a historic precedent of its existence. So just keep that in. That's what I'm trying to point out here.
Well, Pat, I think you have that correct. If you look at the Catholic Church as a feudal system, then you can understand why it leans democratic.
because liberalism and feudalism and oppressive systems of centralized government with one figurehead and then a small group of people who decide for the masses, that's the noble classes, that's the Politburo. I don't see much difference. Anybody else? I mean, that's my view. So that's why I'm saying that, you know. So yeah.
What, Ed, since you are our special guest, what's your take?
About everything we've been talking about here. I have a lot of opinions, you know. I think I've said all I need to say, you know, about this particular subject. I think everybody, even though that, you know, I know the one person disagrees mainly with me calling the, you know, Catholic Church liberal, I think he has a lot of good points.
Tesler?
Let me just address some of that for a little bit so that people can understand where real Catholics are supposed to be coming from. And unfortunately, Catholics don't always come from the right place or go to the right place. Remember, as with any real religion, there is a body of beliefs. There's a body of beliefs. And it's not that big, but there's a body of beliefs that says you should not do this, you should do this, et cetera, et cetera. One of those things, of course, is birth control. And there are other things that are within that have not changed, ladies and gentlemen, in 2,000 years. Not in 2,000 years. Now, you can look to human man-made things like eating meat on Friday or doing this or doing that. Those are man-made laws, and they are changed, okay? But the basic dogma of the Catholic Church has not changed. It has not changed, ladies and gentlemen, in 2,000 years. The problem is we have too many politicians and others who think they know about the Catholic faith and Protestants who broke off from the Catholic faith. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, every single Protestant religion is an offshoot of the Catholic faith. I mean, it was. I mean,
true.
Let's not forget that. So when you consider all of those issues, you know, I'll be the first to tell you I don't like people like Pelosi. Because they're worse than a Protestant. Why? Because they know better. They know they're not supposed to say those kinds of things as a Catholic. That's why those guys get them. And just to wrap this up from my perspective, I just want you to know that in about 2 weeks, I do have a fellow on my show. It's not necessarily a plug, but it's relevant. There's a website called realcatholictv.com. Now, if that is the kind of Catholicism, that is the kind of understanding of Catholicism that I like. That is the real way to understand being a Catholic is all about. And on that company's YouTube site, they have over 10 million. That's 10 million hits. I mean, they're going to be doing something right. That is the kind of website that many Catholics who are conservative go to see. Just
well,
so you know that
that's
there's
very
a big
true, Tesler. That's very true, Tesler. And my point, and I'll end on this topic with this, is that there was a pope for 32 days who wanted to audit the Vatican Bank and straighten things up. He died. A year after the new pope decided to challenge many of the other traditional issues, they tried to kill him, as
yep.
well as Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan.
Yep.
Those aren't coincidences, my friends.
No, they're not. You're right.
Okay.
Just to Mike's point real quick about land. You were saying something about them being the largest landholder. If you get a chance, do a little research on something called the Mortmain Acts, and you'll find that the feudal system tried to end that because the church was trying to do that way back, I believe, 1400 or so, even earlier maybe. So just thought I'd mention that.
Okay. We got another caller coming in. I'm trying to get this person back online, and here we go. Area code 770, you're back on the air at 710. Is this
Yeah, it's me. I'm just I just tuned back in, so I'm not sure what's being talked about right now. So I'll just listen in for a couple of minutes, and then
what did you?
Yeah.
Oh, what is that? Who's got R2-D2 in the background?
That's Doc Jones. Doc Jones has some background noise here.
It's the damn Twitter thing on the iPad. That's what it is. But anyway, if you allow me to just listen a little bit and enjoy some comments and talking.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to mute your mic for a little bit, Doc Jones. You're still having some background noise. Maybe you can clear that up. All right, you're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to welcome everyone into the chat room. The chat room is going really, really lively. I want to thank everyone for participating. Let you know our call-in line is open if you want to join this multifaceted conversation here. It's 917-889-3675. And I had been hoping my floor reporter from CPAC would be calling in. But as she said earlier, she's been running all over the place, and it's, you know, very crazy over there. She's probably having a blast. Our guest is Ed Denzel, the author of Govicide Comply. And if anyone's interested in his book, there is a link on this show page. Just click on where it says the Denzel domain, and you can download his ebook for free. I'm going to play a clip here, and I'm going to ask everyone to give a little comment on it. This is from yesterday on CPAC. This is Representative Steve King, and this is some of the outtakes from his speech. Got to love this guy. Here we go, Representative Steve King at CPAC. Okay, let's play this. And why isn't this playing?
And at night, the janitors would come through, which were Nancy's Stasi troops, and screw out those light bulbs, those Edison bulbs, and give me every once in a while curlicue bulbs. And so I would screw them out and send the interns out to get me some of those good Edison light bulbs. I got tired of standing in the shower for 12 minutes while the government issued water rationing Al Gore water saver showerhead, dribbled that water down on me, and I drilled it out. And now my 12-minute shower is a 3-minute shower, and I've got 9 minutes every day to beat up on the liberals. And you've got a 1.6-gallon flush toilet. So now we are a nation of double flushers with designer plungers because the Stasi police from the regulating government have taken away another piece of our liberty and regulated nationwide that the water supply in Tucson is equivalent to the water supply in Steve King's little piece of ground where my well's 6.5 feet deep and never gone dry. I look around, and I see places like... For example, California, they've banned Happy Meals, unless it meets the right quota for calories and fruits and vegetables. And in San Francisco, they prohibit the disparagement of the short, the fat, the tall, and the skinny. So who's that leave? I don't know anybody that isn't one of those four things. I mean, you aren't tall and short at the same time or fat and skinny at the same time, but I guess I'm short and fat is what I am, so... I'm safe in San Francisco, except you probably can disparage conservatives there. And you set aside those educational benefits for combat wounded veterans was the language in the bill. And I read through that, and it lifts my heart to see that. But it said combat wounded veterans and women and minorities. And however you want to look at this society, combat wounded veterans need our special honor. And being a woman or a minority doesn't fit you in that category. I'm sorry. I wrote the amendment to strike the language of special provisions for women and minorities, and I replaced it with the language of anybody but white men. Michelle Obama is leading the effort to cut 1.5 trillion calories out of the diet of our young people because, under Bob Gates, by the way, it's a national security concern that 30% of our youth are too overweight to meet the physical requirements to join our military, and it's too costly to train them. Well, just extend basic training a while. The number one plank in the next president's platform, I believe, is and needs to remain the 100% full repeal of Obamacare, not one vestige of it left behind.
Okay, Ed.
That would require that we make sure that we don't nominate a guy who already started Obamacare in Massachusetts. That's my attitude after all that.
Sorry, he's also that guy you talked about, Ed, has been getting standing ovations on my television every 15 seconds with the CPAC group. They're applauding this guy. I would be throwing rocks at them. No offense.
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, you know, if you're gonna you know, whip up all that red meat and everything else, then you got to take it a step further and just, you know, if you're gonna speak the truth, you got to get up there and say, well, if we're gonna repeal Obamacare, then we got to have somebody in there who is the opposite of that. And Mitt Romney's not that guy.
Even George Soros agrees with that. He even said, if it's Romney's the nominee, there's little difference between him and Obama.
I remember that. That's from a few weeks ago, yes.
And Krugman came along, on, I think it's the day after, something like that, and he even said that that Romney has abandoned the conservative principles and then referred to everyone else as, you know, complete ignoramuses or something like that, who were for them, as in that's the reason why he's leading.
Most Republicans themselves in leadership positions have abandoned the conservative principles. That's the basis of the forum of Annie and her Tea Party, is that true constitutional values. It's been compromised because of the finance. They've been for sale, and they've been purchased. And there is very little difference between the Democrats and Republican parties as they stand now and their candidates, with the exception of a D and an R next to their name. Go ahead.
Good. Go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry.
I see that differently. See, the way I look at the three main guys, because I don't consider Ron Paul to be a serious candidate, but the way I look at it, Mitt, is that it's not that he can't be conservative. It's just he has to be pushed in that direction. You know, you have to get a snowplow that you're probably using in Michigan or Minnesota, wherever you are out there, to get him in that direction. Whereas with Newt, and I know he sat on the couch with Nancy Pelosi, and I know Rick Santorum back in 2008 called Mitt Romney a true conservative and everything. These are two guys who, my impression of them, although they are far from perfect, they are two guys that you just have to keep on the conservative path. Whereas I think you have to lead Mitt Romney to it. And that's the main difference between those two and Mitt. Even though, like I said, Rick and Newt, not perfect either.
Ed, I think you just hit the nail directly on the head there, and that was my point. Several times I've said it on the show over and over and over again. No matter who the nominee is in the Republican Party, we have to continually push to make sure that they stay on the conservative road. Now, with Romney, that's going to be one hell of a bulldozer you're going to need. But where with the other two, as in Santorum and Gingrich, we have to be constantly in their face saying, hey, listen, before you even think of stepping over that line, you got to remember we're here, and that way we make them toe the line. And it's easier to get someone to toe the line than pushing them back onto it.
Right.
I'll just say this. I the reason I picked Newt so far, mainly, he's the primary, and I'd settle for Santorum, is because Newt, even though he was on the couch, he tends to follow us. He does. He goes in the direction of where we seem to be trending. He hasn't actually put a mandate on us, no matter what he supported. Romney has, and so has Obama. And so when I look at the way this lays out, I see Newt as at least being – it's not so much that we would have to push him or not push him or keep him on track. He's got an idea of the future even. He has a direction.
He can't win.
That's what they say. I don't agree.
As I've said in my podcast, and I've written it places, and I've had conversations with other, you know, with different people, besides Ronald Reagan, Newt Gingrich has done more conservatism as a politician than anybody in this country since the founding. You know, with the contract with America, with all those special orders that he used to do in the 80s that were seen on C-SPAN. Of all the politicians, he has done the most next to Ronald Reagan, and so when people, like, slough him off and make fun of him, like Ann Coulter has done and other people, I just don't get it. I know he's not perfect. I know that, you know, he's a little bit arrogant and everything else, but when he was called upon, he did his job, you know, which is more than I can say for Mitt Romney and, to a lesser extent, Rick Santorum.
Okay, Doc Jones?
Yeah, you know, I've had this argument several times with Tesla, G-Ski, and a couple other folks. You know, it's very romantic to suggest, you know, to want to have a true red-blooded American conservative in the White House, but we just don't have one that can win. You know, unless you just want to say, okay, well,
I'm going to go ahead and vote for Newt or vote for Santorum because I believe that they possess true conservative values. Even though they can't win, they're not going to win, they won't even come close. And just if you do that, you're basically saying, okay, well, 4 more years of Obama will be just fine.
I think any one of these three guys has a very, very, very good chance of beating Barack Obama. I think that all this stuff about a Barack Obama is going to be hard to beat and everything, I think it's totally overblown. We have to keep in mind one thing. As bad as John McCain is, he didn't get – I mean, yeah, compared to maybe the 2000 election, he got blown out. But it's not like we have to change every liberal's mind. We only have to change about 7% of them. You know, we 7 out of 100. That's all it has to flip to get a Republican back into the office. And I think that more than 7 out of 100 Americans have ditched Barack Obama.
And Santorum has 2 points on Romney right now in head-to-head under Rasmussen. So I'm not sure that whole argument even makes sense that only Romney can beat Obama. I think that's a worn-out argument. I think it's worn-out. I think it's
not
misdirected.
Worn out at all.
Oh,
it's
completely.
It's not worn out at all.
Completely.
Let me tell you something right now. Let me tell you something right now. Look, let's be logical here and put away the passion. I love the passion. I love it. I mean, I wish my girlfriend, my wife had the kind of passion you have. I tell you what, but let me just,
honesty,
let's just be.
Passion.
Yeah, right. Let's
yeah,
just,
it is.
Honesty, then. Honesty.
And reasonableness.
Honesty.
I
reasonableness.
I
and all that shit. All right, but listen. Newt cannot win. It's not going to happen.
Because you said so?
No, because he sucks all to be damned when it comes to relating to the average American. He doesn't have the skills, the people skills necessary. People don't like the dude, and they're not going to vote for him. He's an asshole.
Wait.
Please, that was addressed to me, so let me just say this. You're going to tell me I'm the emotional one with the language you're using right now? Please
yes.
spare me. Please spare me.
I'm a United States Marine. I use this kind of language, you know, all the time. And it has nothing to do with passion or anything. It's just the way I am.
Right.
But
right.
hey,
uh-huh.
Newt cannot uh-huh. win.
yeah, uh-huh.
All right. Let's go beyond Newt. Let's turn around and go on to a completely different subject before we end up with World War 14 here. Okay. We understand our differences between Romney and Newt. And let's
mm-hmm.
hope maybe then we'll push this out of the way and say Santorum will be the one nominee. So I'll throw that one in there. I have a clip here from Rubio over at CPAC yesterday, and he was talking about the global leadership. Let me play this clip and get some comments on it.
The world is what it is today because of the American century. With all the problems we have around the world, let's not forget how different this world has been since America has been the most powerful country on the planet. Today, millions of people around the world are part of the middle class because the rise of democracy and free enterprise.
Okay, now this goes directly into your book here, Ed.
Yes.
Okay.
My reaction to that is, and if he's such, you know, why didn't he run for president? You know, I just moved to Florida here a few months ago, so he's my senator now. Why didn't you run for president? If you got all these great speeches and all these great ideas and everything else, then you got to run. I know it's not convenient. I know it's not easy. I know that they're going to, you know, go into your past. However, the reason your family left Cuba and everything else, you got to run.
Now, the question
is... I love him, but you got to run.
The question is at the time of his birth, were both of his parents American citizens?
I have no idea.
All right, well, we have another caller.
I'd like to at least have him as a choice.
All right, we do have another caller in the line. Let's see if this is one of our friends from CPAC. Area code 678, you're live on the air with 7 cents. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is Stella Lohman.
Hi, Stella. This is our floor reporter from CPAC. How are you doing over there?
I'm doing great. We just had a great time. I was hoping to keep them here for you, but Dr. Alveda King was just here. She's working with Cain Solutions, Herman Cain's new venture since suspending his presidential campaign. We had Deneen. She's a Fox News contributor, Deneen Borelli. She's got a new book out called Backlash, so she's premiering that here. Dr. C.L. Bryant has Runaway Slave. He was in the original Tea Party movie documentary, but it, the sequel, if you will, is called Runaway Slave. It basically is about how the country, segregation and everything, how it's keeping the people down instead of giving them true liberty. But right now I have standing with me a gentleman who has his own organization, and his name is David Johnson, and he has his own communications out of Georgia, and I'm going to just put him on so you're not talking to me. Here he is.
Hello, Mr. Johnson. How you doing? Welcome to Southern Sense.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
And what is this organization you have in Georgia?
Strategic Vision LLC. We're a public relations and political consulting organization.
Okay, and what does that do?
What we do is we help Republican candidates, conservative candidates across the country get elected and get their message out.
Okay. You're live here on Southern Sense. I'm your host, Ann Ubelis, with my co-host, Cool Mike.
Okay.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm listening.
Okay.
Oh, I was going to ask, what exactly, like, how many people, I'm picturing you guys in there, what exactly is, what size room are you in? How many people are there? Sounds like a big party.
Oh, it is. I mean, there's three floors. I'm actually now at the lower level. There's three floors. There's several thousand people. I mean, very enthusiastic. These are conservative activists from all across the country. And what's really great to see is the number of young people who have turned out from colleges, even some from high schools across the country, to take part in this and advance conservative ideas.
All right. Now, I was hearing that Romney was just speaking a while ago. What's your take on that?
Yes, he was. And what was interesting is he's had a very small presence here. Governor Romney in previous years has had a booth at CPAC, had strong demonstrations. Until today, there was no sign of the Romney campaign whatsoever. And the majority of people who are here for the Romney campaign look like they're young students. And I actually overheard several of them who were wearing Romney stickers saying, "Who is Mitt Romney?" And what's interesting, too, is before he spoke today, he had a meeting with numerous conservative leaders trying to find out how he can win over their support.
Well, how is Santorum then comparing with Romney there?
The response for Rick Santorum was very strong, very emotional. He had standing audience. It was jam-packed. It was a much smaller audience for Governor Romney. What was interesting, though, is the Santorum campaign still seems to be making mistakes as far as organization. They were late for some events. They weren't adequately staffed, and they missed some television opportunities. So
oh, really?
Santorum's got the passion. He doesn't have the organization. Romney's got the organization. He doesn't have the passion.
Wow. And where does that put Gingrich then?
Gingrich is the wild card. What Newt Gingrich has to do, and he's yet to speak here at CPAC, he somehow has convinced attendees that he's still viable, that he is still a viable conservative alternative to Mitt Romney, and that he's not going to be shut out in Arizona and Michigan this month or in the Super Tuesday states.
That's interesting. Now, we've got...
May I ask David a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, David. My name is Ed Denzel. I'm a conservative author. I have a new book out called Govicide Comply. And you had mentioned that CPAC this year is... obviously, a lot of people have gone there. There's a lot of excitement and everything else. But then, as a political consultant, why do you think that the turnout in these caucuses in the primaries, except for South Carolina, has been lower than 2008? Do you have any insight into that?
I do. I think realistically, the core base right now, the conservative base, is not enthusiastic with any of these candidates. You even hear at CPAC a lot of them saying, you know, I hope Santorum, I hope Gingrich keeps going. I hope no one has enough delegates so we can have a second ballot. And if we have a second ballot, they can nominate candidates from the floor. They're not legally bound, the delegates. And there's talk of Mitch Daniels, Paul Ryan, and Bobby Jindal as compromise candidates. I think right here, conservatives are revved up. They want to take back the Senate. They want to hold the House. But they're not enthusiastic about any of these candidates right now.
Hmm. Okay.
That has happened through the years in both parties. If you think of Walter Mondale and Bob Dole, as well as George McGovern, in many ways the parties have reconciled two candidates. But even in the cases of some other ones, they are unenthusiastic, such as John Kerry. They reconcile to them, but they're unenthusiastic, which we all know is key when electing a candidate.
It is, and I mean the key thing is the base will go out and vote because they want to defeat Barack Obama, but what they're not going to be doing is stuffing envelopes, knocking on doors, calling friends up if they're not enthusiastic about a candidate.
That's very interesting. Now, we have other people here inside the room. Tati, would you like to ask a question?
Oh, no, I'm fine. Thank you very much. It's okay.
Okay, and we got another caller coming in from area code 321. You're on the air live with Southern Sense. You have a question?
Yes, this is Jason Hoyt. Stella told me to call in. I'm live at CPAC with Big Voices Media today.
Okay, we got another caller here from CPAC. All right, Mr. Johnson, I want to thank you for the call-in. I really appreciate
that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
You bet. Yeah, we're having a great time here. Yesterday was packed, but it was a slow day. Today is a lot more traffic, a lot more things going on. I even spent some time outside with the Occupy folks, checking out what they're doing, but I'm spending a lot of my time down on the exhibitor floor with Big Voices Media, and we're offering a new way to challenge the mainstream media, and I appreciate you guys and all you do as well. So,
great. Okay. Are you with an area code 312? Are you from the Windy City?
Actually, no, 321. It's Central Florida area.
Okay, everyone's from Florida.
I'm originally from Rockford, 815. But I live down in Florida now, and so great.
So, what is your biggest if you were to leave right now, what would you take away as your biggest impression regarding the CPAC gathering for today?
Wow. Well, yesterday I joined Steve Bannon and Brandon Darby and Andrew Breitbart, and Steve Bannon released. I'm sure you're familiar. He did the movie The Undefeated about Sarah Palin. He did the Tea Party trilogy, three movies in 2010. But he released an extended trailer, teaser. It's a new movie coming out this spring. It's called Occupy Unmasked. And it was hard-hitting. He refers to it as a war film. And it's really digging into those emails that Breitbart uncovered that tells you the truth about who has started the Occupy movement. Lisa Fithian, for example, the anarchist. And they have hard proof and hard evidence. And they have some hard-hitting video really demonstrating that there is no comparison to what they're doing comparing to the Tea Party movement, which I've been a part of since the very beginning out of Central Florida. And so I really take away that major experience that they had that they presented yesterday. But today they're getting a lot of traffic here with Big Voices Media at our booth. And we've joined the State Policy Network talking about our new media channel and all that as well. So, there's a lot of candidates running around. There's a lot of establishment folks. I wish these people were talking about the Constitution more. I wish they were talking about Article 1, Section 8 and the proper role of the federal government. Last night I did get to see the movie Nullification that was put out by the 10th Amendment Center. And I think that there is an appetite out there, but I don't think it's happening quickly enough where we have candidates talking about their government solutions to our problems. We should be just referring back to the Constitution and the proper role of government. So I don't know. There's an awakening going on, but it's not happening fast enough. We look at what Occupy is doing. I don't know. We've got a long way to go. This year is going to be pretty interesting.
Right, yeah. How do we get a hold of your channel? Where is it?
Sure. It's bigvoicesmedia.com. And we do is we broadcast on triple play technology. It's available on the Internet, on your computer. It's available on your mobile device, and we also broadcast on Roku on your television. And it's a free model, free subscription, grassroots groups, big organizations. You can have your own channel for free and get your material out there. And there's going to be a day where we're going to get our message out there. We're going to bypass the mainstream media.
Okay, now I have to apologize because when Stella handed you the phone, we had another caller in, so I didn't catch your name. Is this Greg?
No, this is Jason. Jason,
hi, Jason. Jason, we met over in Myrtle Beach.
That's right. Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, thank you so much. We were there for the South Carolina Tea Party convention.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, you were supposed to be calling me. Anyway, and I have to tell you that when we went to the debate, my husband was wearing your T-shirt, so I think that's one of the reasons why the camera didn't go over towards us.
I'm sure the T-shirt, is it the one that says, I am the media?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you know, we're training citizen journalists. For so long we thought the media was telling the complete story. For so long we thought that the party structure was doing the get out the vote. We thought that the party was taking care of voter fraud. Well, now there's a lot of political entrepreneurship going on, and we the people are filling those voids ourselves, taking those opportunities into our own hands. True the Vote is here. They're out of Houston with the King Street Patriots. They're taking on voter fraud like you would not believe. I really recommend people get plugged into what they're doing. They have a big hand in helping verify what's going on in Wisconsin. But True the Vote is here, Big Voices Media, and a lot of these great organizations that are here at the floor of CPAC.
Oh, if True the Vote is there, that means Katrina's running around there. If you see her, tell her I said hello.
You bet, I'll do that. Sure.
And could I ask Jason a question?
Sure, go ahead, Ed.
Hi, Jason. This is Ed Denson. I'm an author of a new conservative novel, Govicide Comply. And you'd mentioned the documentary about Occupy Wall Street or whatever the city is. And you mentioned Andrew Breitbart. I had listened to Andrew Breitbart this morning. He was subbing for Dennis Miller on his show. And I'm wondering what kind of presence Occupy has there at CPAC.
Well, they're outside. There's a lot of police that are holding them back. There's, a few hundred of them, several hundred of them, or, if it was a Tea Party group, of course, but what the media would say is there's only dozens of people, but there's
right.
actually hundreds of folks out there. They're banging their drums. They've got their signs. Life is unfair. We are the 99%. We want ours. I mean, they're pretty obnoxious. They're tame right now because there's a lot of police presence. I was here for the AFP National Summit, and these guys were violent. It was disgusting, and the police let it happen here in D.C.
Wow.
Today is different. Today is very different. They had police on the sidewalk every 20 feet, not letting any of them go by. But, of course, they had to barricade the whole road off, and they let them have the entire
right.
road. Because they went and moved. So they're not in the building. They don't have a presence here. They're just
right
the outside getting media attention.
So how many Occupy people would you say? 200, 300, or?
Yeah, I would say 200 to 300. I can send you guys
right.
some photos that I posted on Facebook as well. But anyways, I don't know.
Okay.
It's going to get worse. I think that they're going to get more obnoxious. They're going to get more aggressive. And we'll see what happens when it escalates.
Okay, thanks.
Wow.
You bet.
Now, we were asking before about the take on the various different presidential candidates, and Romney has a very small presence, and I was hearing that Santorum is not exactly organized. What is your take on all this?
You mean here at CPAC or
right.
the race as a whole?
At CPAC.
Well, I have to admit, I've been down here at the booth helping out Big Voices Media. Now, Rick Santorum was down here going up and down the rows, and he had quite an entourage and quite a following with him. I haven't seen Romney at all, so I don't know how much of a president. I didn't even know he was here, really. But I did read on Drudge that he was meeting with conservative leaders. I don't know what that means. I don't know who he met with. I know that he doesn't have a very strong relationship with the Tea Party movement. And I don't really think that I really don't know too many Tea Party folks that are really that interested in his candidacy. So, but again, I do believe a lot of folks are going to vote anybody but Obama. which is sad. I wish we were voting for somebody, but that's the way it is right now.
Well, what do you think is the chance of then having a, what do they call it, a convention when someone be nominated from the floor?
A brokered one.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's likely. I hear a lot of buzz about that, and I got to tell you, I don't know where all of you stand, but I agree with Sarah Palin. I agree with Jim DeMint. The GOP needs to pay attention to Ron Paul. I believe he is right about so many things, whether or not he's presidential, whether or not he's a leader, whether or not he communicates well and commands the stage and all of those different things that people look for. That, you know, that's not an issue. I want Ron Paul to stay in this as long as possible. He is right about the Constitution. He is right about the 10th Amendment, the Article 1, Section 8. He's right about the Federal Reserve. And the GOP would do themselves very well to pick up on that. And if we have a brokered convention, I don't know what will happen with regarding candidacies. If you know, if we can get Jim DeMint in there, we can get Rand Paul on the ticket, I don't know. But at least as far as influencing the platform of the party, to start paying attention to these things and not just offer them lip service. Because I tell you what, $15.5-16 trillion in a national debt, it can't be about the fact that we're going off the cliff and we're debating between whether it's going to be a red car or a blue car, or whether or not we go off the cliff at 90 miles an hour or 70 miles an hour. We've got to get candidates in here who are serious, who want to slam on the brakes and turn this thing around and save this country, not just pay it lip service. So, you know, I don't know about a broker convention, but I know that some things have to change, and I know that we've got to demand Article 1, Section 8, 18 enumerated powers. It's what the federal government should be doing. Everything else should be left up to the states, to the people.
I think it's amazing we have a Blog Talk Radio show. We have a guest who's there now and people from all over the country. And pretty much, as true conservatives, we're all in agreement. There is no one person we want to hoist on our shoulders and run around bragging this is who we're backing. I think it clearly indicates just how to the liberal side the Republicans have turned. And if they don't pay attention to us, indeed, we may their party is headed towards a disastrous in the fall.
I completely agree. Yep.
If I can add something to all that as well, this is
okay, Tesla.
You know, when you look at the feel of four, I think essentially that conservatives, real conservatives, like either Newt or Rick, one or the other. Then we kind of go to the fake, otherwise known as Romney. And then finally, we seem to have a tendency to go towards, Ron Paul because of his, you know, his weird ideas about international events. And I think that's where we all have a tendency to go for. And no, there is no Ronald Reagan this year. And we're going to have to learn to live with that. Now, the comment was made that, you know, you're throwing away your vote by if you don't support Mittens. Well, I beg to differ because, it's the conservative passion that brought Ronald Reagan to power. Back when he was running, back during his first time, everybody said that this guy couldn't win. Everybody said that the establishment was really the thing that was running and driving this thing. And everybody was wrong. And why were they wrong? Because the American people like commitment. They like to hear somebody, the American people want to hear somebody like a Rick. Or a Newt. They want to hear clear ideas. They don't want to hear the mush of a Romney. They don't want to hear it because you don't know where the guy's standing from. And that's why the real conservatives in this race, Newt and Santorum, are hopefully they will finally be the Republican nominee. Come this summer.
But I don't think it's just a conservative
voice.
Let's
a swish.
Let's go to our guest and ask him this. Do you see down at the CPAC meeting, I don't think it's just a conservative thing, Tesler. I think we want our rights back. We want our Constitution back. And we want a candidate to stand up and basically say this is bullcrap. The government is too big. It needs to be cut in half. And we need our constitutional rights back, to which even the Republicans have become socialists and don't have the backbone because they're led by people like Mitch McConnell and people who are tied in.
All right, Jason.
I agree, like Romney. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree more
with
him. Tesla, let Jason answer this, please.
Yeah, no, listen. I love, right when you said this is bullcrap, that's what we want to hear. Now, I summarized these four candidates in a couple different lines. Mitt Romney says, you know, that's not how I'm a businessman. Now it's my turn, because I'm a businessman, now it's my turn to manipulate 70,000 pages of tax code with my 59-point plan. That's not strong enough. Newt Gingrich says, hey, I'm a historian, and I know how to implement government solutions. You know, he can get a crowd riled up by saying I'm going to get rid of the EPA, but then the other half of the sentence is, and I'm going to replace it with an ESA. And he's going to, you know, and that bothers people. You got Rick Santorum who says, No, that's not what the founders meant by individual liberty. We're going to legislate morality. And then you have Ron Paul who says, hey, wait a minute, I've been saying this for 30 years. And so, you know, the change has got to come from within. We can't wait for a Reagan. You have to be the next Reagan. We can't wait for the next George Washington. We have to raise the next George Washington. The change has got to come from within. And you're absolutely right. These guys better take it seriously instead of just rearranging the deck chairs, instead of saying it's my turn to manipulate 70,000 pages of tax code. This is serious. This is a very serious matter. And I do think that if the Republicans think they're just going to get away with it, just pay lip service, and then implement their own government solutions next fall or next year, the Republicans are going to go, they're going to be shoved on the ash heap of history, and we're going to form another party and leave them.
That's very interesting. I think that's an angle that we're looking at this point.
You said form another party and leave them. I think really, realistically, the Republican Party has already left us.
You nailed it. You're absolutely right. I mean, I've heard people talk about the convention and Ron Paul with his delegates and all that. They're going to be able to change the platform. Do they even know? I didn't know a platform existed. I thought it was just empty shell where people just house themselves and believe that they have the solutions to our problems. Let's replace the platform with Article 1, Section 8, or with the Constitution, for crying out loud. Let's see how they do. But I don't believe in a third party and splitting the vote for this November. I think to the American people, there's a debate right now, and Barack Obama, even though this is not about him, it's not about one man or one administration, it's about 100 years of heading into the wrong direction. But I do believe that Barack Obama in this election represents the worst form of aggressive progressive ideology. He must be removed and replaced. But, like I said, we're having a debate. We're going to go off the cliff in a red car or a blue car, or we're going to go off the cliff at 90 miles an hour or 70 miles an hour. So, you know, I'd love to not support a third party this election, but maybe we have one ready day after the election and we're gone. Let these guys fall by the way of the wig.
That's very true. That is very true. We have another caller in on the line. Area code 612, you're live with Southern Sense. Our guest is Jason from Big Voice Media. Who am I speaking to?
It's Reactionaries.
Hi, Reactionary. You have a question.
Actually, when I've been watching CPAC most of the day, and when we're looking at the Mittens versus Newt versus Rick Santorum dynamic, what you see, if you're paying attention, is that for every one person that's clapping for Mitt, there are between 8 and 10 more who just look uncomfortable.
Interesting. Jason?
Actually, I lost that last part. The 8 to 10 more that what?
Looked uncomfortable.
That just sit there and look uncomfortable.
Well, of course. This is the Conservative Political Action Conference.
Right.
This isn't MPAC. This is CPAC.
It's nice to know. one thing about conservatives, conservatives stand by conservatism, period. It's not negotiable. You see someone like Mitch McConnell, who is just a puppet of anything and everything, that he's like a store product that can be bought. And the same thing with the Democrats, on and on and on. Conservatives can't be. I mean, like Doc Jones and many of the oathers, they are people who have sworn to uphold this Constitution. It doesn't matter whether it's dimes to donuts or billions to trillions. These people stand by that Constitution with their body, spirit, and soul. And in conservatives, they cannot be bought. True conservatism, you cannot be bought. Because for true conservatives, for long term, it's worth a fortune and riches not to sell yourself out.
Right. Right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, when Mitch McConnell talks about the 10th Amendment, he almost mispronounces it. You know what I mean? It's like he can't pronounce it. It's like he doesn't say it often enough to actually say it right. But when he comes here and he speaks, yeah, he might talk about it. He might talk about, oh, the federal government's too big. I mean, he's got the fist pump, you know. But is it real? Is it genuine? And I would ask you guys as well, talk about Article 1, Section 8, 18 enumerated powers. We have got to make that part of the lexicon, the conversation, every single day. Conservatism, you know, I don't really want to conserve what we have. I want to restore what we had. So I don't even know if I'm a conservative anymore. I'm more of a restorer. I want to go back to our founding principles, not just conserve what we have. I mean, I get it. I'm playing with words here, but you've got to talk about the Constitution. The founders were right. Our rights do come from God, not from government. And the Article 1, Section 8 lays out the things the federal government should be doing. If we should demand every single bill that they pass references where in Article 1, Section 8 that they have the authority.
Yeah, that's very great.
Prior to the Constitution was a declaration. And that declaration,
right,
written by Thomas Jefferson, clearly spelled out a direction that we're going into again in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two pieces there that I think are the most important. The first one is recognizing that our rights come from God. We're endowed by our Creator. The second one is right after the pursuit of happiness is, it says, and to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And that is it. That is the proper role of government, to secure our rights. We are naturally free. We can come and go. We can go and do. As long as I'm not infringing upon your rights, I should be free. But look at all the stuff that they do. When you drive down the street, look at all the things that you're not allowed to do and not allowed to. It's just pathetic. It's way too big.
Legitimate, if you go to the Declaration, too, it says that they have to act with the consent of the governed, and that's the legitimacy. And that's what takes us to, like, health care and the fact that they didn't even read it. So if they didn't even read it, how can that be the consent of the governed, that they're using any power whatsoever to pass that law? And that it all comes down to what's in the Declaration and how the Constitution is there to enforce that.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And it's to secure our rights with the consent of the governed. It's not the consent of the governed to do anything they want. We're not a democracy. We're not 50% plus one. We're not mob rule. And these guys out there with the Democracy Now, and even though the ones out there that are trying to get rid of the Electoral College, freak me out, because we are not a democracy. The founders deplored democracy. You will not find the word democracy in our Declaration, in our Constitution, nor in the Constitution of any of the 50 states. It was left out on purpose. We are promised a Republican form of government. We are a republic. It's to secure our rights.
I feel good, man.
I'm so glad you guys let me rant today. I feel great.
Okay, Jason, we had also another question from Thomas. Thomas?
Hey, Annie.
You had a question.
I was sitting here listening to the dialogue, and we got back on the whole issue discussing Ron Paul and how what he says, you know, makes sense. But once again, goes back to our earlier discussion in that he's saying what he says to play up to people, because his voting record of his past 20 years in Congress doesn't match up with what he's saying. And if he was to get elected, and I stick by this, he
would be far worse, I believe, than Barack Obama, because he's not a conservative. He's not even a Republican. So, you know, that I didn't necessarily have a question, but I just wanted to make that comment to Jason and see what he thought on that, because...
Okay, Thomas, your line just dropped. Jason?
Yeah, well, my first question would have been, give me an example of one of his votes that goes contrary to his lip service, as he probably was trying to describe it as. He's been saying the same things for 30 years. I think his voting record is for all to see, and I think he's a pretty consistent guy. Again, is he presidential? Is he a leader? All that kind of good stuff. Is he going to represent the country? All that has to be determined by everybody, but I think the philosophies of liberty, I think he espouses the best. I mean, Rick Santorum, for example. The Department of Education, he voted to double its size with No Child Left Behind. He supported Medicare Part D and all of that. So does he say now that, you know, the 10th Amendment, states' rights? Well, was he saying that 8 years ago? I mean, you know, Newt Gingrich, the same thing with the EPA and ESA. Again, everybody has to make up their own mind. There is no perfect candidate. You have to prioritize what they're lacking. And, you know, prioritizing a couple votes here and there versus, you know, their definition of liberty and individual liberty and the proper role of government and sticking to the Constitution, everybody has to make that decision up.
And keep in mind, I don't think there's many candidates that support rescinding the Patriot Act at all. I think, with the exception of Paul, I think most of them are very much in favor of basically keeping the taxpayers down by
right.
supporting more and more federal bureaucracy by way of police and by way of censorship.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And just the fact that they wrote that Patriot Act, and again, back then, I wasn't paying attention as much as I am today. You know, I paid attention, and, you know, back then, the argument was Republican and Democrat, and it was supporting Bush. And Bush was doubling the size of the Department of Education. When Bush was spending all that money and raking up the deficits and the national debt, I believe he actually loved the country. So I think there was a difference back then. Right now, with what the administration's doing and what they're doing, I'm not saying he's un-American or nothing like that. I'm just saying he just doesn't get what makes America great. So I don't know.
Jason, this is Ed again. You had mentioned, you know, there's just no Ronald Reagan in this field. Do you ever pause to think about why there is no Ronald Reagan in the field, or why there doesn't seem to be? I mean, I have my own opinions on that, but I was wondering what yours might be.
Well, I never even thought of that question, but my first gut instinct is just to say that politics has become much more of an ugly business. I don't know how good people actually want to get into this race or get into politics. And with today's day and age of technology and media and getting the cameras in your face, and granted, you know, I'm not saying they weren't back then, but it's pretty brutal out there. It's pretty rough out there. And I don't even think that the media was as biased back then as they are now. It's such an uphill battle that it's such a cesspool of political activity that I don't know how the good among us say, yeah, boy, I can't wait to run for office and get destroyed by the media and have my personal life ripped apart and my past and old girlfriends and, you know, all of that, you know, exposed and all that. I just, maybe that's it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Because, I'm 41 years old, so I can easily remember Ronald Reagan being president. And my opinion on this is why there doesn't seem to be somebody like that, although we have people who are close. I mean, some people might say that Sarah Palin is close, or some people might say that Marco Rubio is close and everything. But, you know, when Ronald Reagan, you know, came around, it was like some unique circumstances. I mean, he didn't even hold public office until he was 55. I mean, he became governor of California in, like, 1966. So he, you know, in that, I mean, 55 isn't so old now. But back then in 1960s, you know, people didn't live as long. He was an older gentleman, and he had a lot of time as a private citizen to form those conservative ideas outside of any sort of government having to deal with liberals in sort of a government setting. He got to go around with GE. He got to give those speeches to the point where he had a lot of time on his hands. And so when he actually ended up running for governor of California, of course, we know his Time for Choosing speech, which is completely awesome.
Yeah.
But he had this honed down to a science of being conservative. It was part of him. And I think part of the problem we have today is that conservatives, maybe it's that they get into politics too early and they learn too early about compromise, about
yes.
politicking, about campaigning, and never really hone those core ideas that cannot be bent at all. And you just
right.
don't see too many politicians who do that, you know, live a conservative life, doing speeches and then decide to run for office in their late 50s.
That's an interesting idea, Jason.
No, this is a great conversation. That's a very that's kind of a deep discussion there. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, you went through training for all those years in communicating, communicating
yeah.
to an audience, communicating with a camera, and then you know as he you know grew up, if you will, he kind of realized that yeah, the Democrat Party left him. He realized he was a Republican. He actually understood American exceptionalism, and he believed in the people. And so he was able to communicate that very well. By the time he was obviously very grown and mature, and then he got on stage and did it. And you're absolutely right. People do, you know, it makes me nervous when you volunteer for campaigns and you've got that
right.
college Republican guy who says, wow,
yes.
I can't wait to run for office. You're like, wow.
Right, right.
That ambition
right.
level is a little bit too ambitious. What is that kid willing to do in order to run for office and make it? And he doesn't have that fortitude that you're talking about.
Right. The confidence.
I love that.
Yeah, the confidence.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, Ronald Reagan, you know, he had four kids. And, you know, he had all that stuff to back him up that when he finally did run for office in his 50s, he was a self-made man outside of government. But he wasn't like a Mitt Romney that he was involved in his family business or anything like that. He was out there professing conservatism.
Keep in mind,
you know,
too, is that Ronald Reagan lost many runs for president, yet he still refused to change, say, okay,
right.
maybe I need to do this to win the second time. No. And the
no.
third time, no. Ronald Reagan stuck to his guns. And you know what? Ronald Reagan was kind of like an old give him hell Harry. He wasn't afraid to swear. He wasn't afraid to tell people put up or shut up. And, you know, he wasn't afraid
yes.
to be a leader, period.
Right.
And
I remember one of the
– This even stems back. The movement of the Republicans even stems back to when Bob Dole ran and the threat of Pat Buchanan becoming president, where the party quickly forced everybody out and forced a Dole-Buchanan race for fear that a true conservatism was about to take over the Republican Party after Bob Dole got his ass kicked in New Hampshire.
Yeah,
right.
but I
right.
would suggest
right.
this, you know, while he was president, he had a Democrat Congress and all that, and he did have to compromise on some things. Look what happened to the national debt during his term. And I get the growth and the, you know, spending and the intimidating and the buildup to defeat the Soviets, if you will. But look at what happened late in the term with amnesty as well. So, and I get that, you know, he's kind of bamboozled with that, but there's some compromises that did have to happen, and he did that. But he did it with such grace.
Hey, anytime we want to go back to a $5 trillion national debt, I'm all for it.
Oh, back in the
which
glory
is what we had, which is what we had in the 1980s.
Yeah, well, back in the glory days $5 trillion.
Let's all
yeah.
keep in mind, throughout history, we all have our favorite politicians or we all have our favorite whatevers, even within our own families, brothers and sisters or cousins. Nothing is perfect. We all have those individuals who
mm-hmm.
we'd like to pounce over the head. And the same thing is with our favorite presidents of all times. I mean, I'm sure there is one thing we know that Ronald Reagan did not compromise, and that is on the values which got him elected. And you know, once
right.
he got elected, he did compromise on things that were going to be a losing battle. He just was not going to win, period. I mean,
right.
there were just so many illegals in the country, as there is now. You just can't do certain things. But the bottom line is, I like the discussion here. We have people from Florida, people from all over. Yet we are true conservatives, unhappy with virtually all of the candidates. And, you know, why isn't there 10 people that we are all fighting over. I like person A. He's really good. And, you know, Annie's like, hell no, I like this person. And Ed's like, no way.
Right. I think the problem is
not happening.
Mike, the problem is that the mainstream media is trying to lead this conversation, and we're trying to take the conversation back. That's the difference. I mean, shows like this, we're trying to now recontrol the argument. We don't want mainstream media to pick out Romney for us. We don't want mainstream media to tell us that birth control should be given away for free. We want to control the conversation and the argument. And I think that's what we have to do. We have to get our voices out, like with Big Voice Media and with my show here. Get our voices out. Take back the argument. And that's what we have to do. And everyone says, well, you know, the system's broken. We can't fix it. Yes, we can fix it, but we got to take that first step. And until we take that first step, nothing's going to get fixed. And we're not going to find ourselves another Ronald Reagan by letting them control the argument.
Right. Yeah.
Since we were able to form a government, it's clear we're able to fix a government. And that, at least as far as I'm concerned, we just have to make the commitment. And our biggest problem has been the commitment. So right now, I mean, you're saying, you know, you guys are talking about the conservative principles. There are people that will still say my constitutional rights. I mean, I even catch myself saying it. And there aren't any constitutional rights. And
that's
so,
right.
You know, I mean, these are things that we keep, you know, we were drummed in our heads. We learned them for most of our lives through education, which was by a bunch of communists. And so we end up with this, with the inability to necessarily see the alignments. We also may not look far enough outside the boxes. Many people just want to beat Obama. We have to do more than beat Obama. We have to put an end to the progressive movement. And if our plan isn't going in that direction, in my view, we're undermining everything our founders went for, no matter what we're doing.
And that stems back to Annie, my guy, in your country, the state of the Republican leader in the state of South Carolina is talking about, he outright said, we are going to challenge Republicans within our own state that don't stand on conservative values. And that's,
you're talking about
that.
You're talking about Chad Conley, the GOP chair that we just recently
and
elected.
Every state has to be this way, incumbent, not incumbent. If you don't stand on conservative principles, we're not only going to run against you, we're not going to back you financially. You defeat those people, you cut off the head of the snake, and you put the people in place that will stand by the conservative values. But the problem is the party itself has been compromised. The fat cats of the country club now more or less, they don't really care about we the people. They care, you know, they basically, as the Supreme Court said, a company is a person.
See, I think to put it in a historical perspective, and I'm no history professor by any means. I take an interest in it, but I don't know the intricacies. The difference today is when I look at Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Barack Obama, and then I think about the founding of this country, I look at them and I say, these are the people who would have sided with the King of England. These people would have been on the opposite side, or these would have been the people who, after the United States was originally formed, they moved to Canada, because a lot of Americans from 13 colonies moved to Canada after the Constitution and the United States was established, because they didn't want to have anything to do with it. And those people back then couldn't get elected into the government, but they can get elected today.
That is true. I mean, you look at it, who would stay here and fight for liberty, or who would flee back home to the king's skirts?
Right.
Well,
I have to think that
they can get elected today. They're being elected in both parties in mass quantity.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is the Russian. See, what I see is the progressives who, as far as I'm concerned, they started with, like, in the 30s with Bezmenov, you know, his whole thing on that. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I'll put a link in a minute. But basically, it started with the Russian subversion of this country, the Soviet subversion of this country, I should say. And that what you have here is they're trying to establish a Soviet party system where the progressive party is in both parties, and we're just voting for the lesser of two evils at best. And we're always on the same platform, the same principles, and completely avoiding and destroying our Constitution, if not completely ignoring it, and setting aside individual liberty and the idea that, you know, we're free. Oh, that doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, well, I just, if I'll just say one more thing, then I have to run. But
I think you said, I'm not sure who it was, said something earlier about how it's just so ingrained in us. I hear people talking about our leaders in Washington, and for crying out loud, guys, they're our representatives. They're civil servants. We elect them. They're not our leaders. That's something we have to change. And there's also a dependency, and I hear the conversation about Obamacare. They're waiting for, it's like we have an oligarchy. It's like we have nine people in robes. We're waiting for them to come down on high in the Supreme Court and tell us what our rights are. And I tell you what, I don't care if the Supreme Court says Obamacare is unconstitutional or if they say it is constitutional. I will not be filling out that form on my tax form, on my tax IRS form, whether or not I have a government-approved health care program. I will not. IRS, come after me. Don't tread on me. My rights come from God. We have to stand up at every level and not just hope that, you know, our leaders in Washington give us our rights back. We have to demand them.
Well, Jason, you just said something perfect, because I was going to make this point earlier when everyone was mentioning constitutional rights. Substitute the words God-given rights for constitutional. Don't say constitutional anymore. Just say God-given rights.
Absolutely. My rights come from God. They're supposed to be protected by our republic. And if they're not being protected by our republic, then we have the right to abolish. We have a right to alter or abolish. And as Herman Cain has said in his campaign speeches, we have some altering and abolishing to do. So
amen.
God bless you guys. Thank you guys so much for having me on today. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you so much for joining us. Ed, our great guest, do you have a closing statement as we wind down? Wow, thank you for being with us all this time, Ed. I mean, that's outstanding.
Anytime somebody wants to get together a bunch of conservatives and we want to hash out the problems of the world, I'm there. You know,
you
so this
well,
is good. I'm glad we got to talk about my book.
I've worn out an alley here in the convention floor. I'm pacing back and forth. And I really enjoyed the conversation. Again, bigvoicesmedia.com. We're going to bypass the mainstream media. We're going to get our voices out, and we're empowering you guys and empowering citizen journalists and organizations across the state. We're putting the microphone back in their hands. So thank you, guys.
Hey.
God bless you.
Hey, you do me a big favor. If you see Mitt Romney around there, grab a chair. I'll bail you out of jail. I've been doing that a lot lately for my friends.
All right, Jason, thank you so much. And we will be talking.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
You take care and be safe. Okay. Now, we've got about half an hour left on the show going on here. Ed, we're having a blast.
Yeah. Yep, that's what we do.
Amazing. Oh, we still got a half hour to go. Oh, man.
Yep.
It's just almost 4:30. I'm like, man, I haven't even looked at the clock like in an hour. I've been so wrapped up in listening.
Oh, you're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is still crowded here. Welcome anyone in the chat room to pick up the phone. Our phone lines have opened back up again. Toddy is back on the line with us. A couple of calls have dropped off because there were so many callers here. I know there's someone from 404 tried calling in. Please feel to try to call back in again. I do apologize because the lines have just been lit up here. Please call in. The number is 917-889-3675. Your opinion is just as important as ours is. We want to get the conservative message out. We're with our guest, Ed Denzel, the author of Govicide, Comply. Of course, now my co-host, I think, just dropped off. So, we're having a blast. Okay. Go ahead.
Overheating the internet, I guess that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I just lost my co-host here. Got to get him to call back in. I'm telling you, the lines have been lighting up, and it's been great. I do want more people to call in. And Toddy is on the line also with us, Toddy.
You just need to look into the little thing that's hovering out by your window or wherever you are and let them see that you know, give them the fake contact with the liberal gene on it, and you'll be fine. Everything will work just perfectly. You know what I'm talking about? The scientists went and found the liberal gene. Are you guys familiar with that? I mean, they actually went to the trouble to say they found this.
Yes,
so that's where I was.
That was like a news item a few months ago. I remember reading that, sure.
Yes, I mean, but the fact is, notice they didn't try to find the conservative gene. They didn't try to find a gene that affects your political outcome. It was specifically the liberal gene. You think they had an agenda?
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if that makes it now eligible to be listed in the psychiatric journal as a mental disease.
Yeah.
Well, that's where you get the money. I mean, from the disability money, you know.
Oh man. Now, Ed.
Yes.
Sorry.
I'm going to go back over to that abortion issue here, and I think our cool mic is Mike. I think you're back here on the line with us, and let's try to get this up here going. And Mike, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back. I was when I was going on my rampage, I threw the phone out of my hands. I didn't even realize that. Anyway, I'm back. Go ahead.
All right. Now, Ed, in your book, you do deal with the issue of abortion on it, and I want to bring this in with Obama's recent issue with the Catholic Church and Sebelius. I want to tie it in with your book. Now, your hero, Hamilton, when Locke is pleading for assistance on getting Jade an abortion.
Yeah, yes. Well, let's not give too much away, but yes.
Now, I keep on saying that I don't even see why healthcare is even in the issue of reproductive. Isn't the progressive idea then is to lower the number of people so there's less government money going out to them, but still keeping
them beholden
to the government?
Within the context of the book and the subplot, I guess you'd call it, in the book about Michael's girlfriend being pregnant illegally because people are only allowed to have sex at certain times and they're only allowed to have a certain amount of children, even more stringent than I guess that you'd have in a country like China, is because, frankly, the government can't do it. You know, and you could equate that to these people today, like what's it called, the zero population growth people, who think that there's just the reason we can't feed everybody on this earth is because there's just too many people. The problem is not that we have too many people. The problem is that capitalism is being, you know, suppressed in these places where people are starving. For example, in Africa. Whereas within the book, they think that the problem is because there's just too many people. And so they're trying to restrict, and that's why it plays into homicide just isn't an important division of the government, because people dying actually helps the government out because they don't have to take care of as many people.
Which, in other words, Obama's Keynesian philosophy of government providing more so people have more does not work. If government stepped out of the way and allowed capitalism to provide, people will have an abundance. They will have more than they need. Compared to government giving so much.
And you even know that within the book, since you've read it, that I use the biggest enemy of the one world government is what? The free enterprisers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are the boogeyman. The way I portray them in the book is that they're like the boogeyman. You're a little kid, the boogeyman's under your bed. The boogeyman doesn't actually exist, but it keeps that child kind of in line, you know. Well, that's the way free enterprises are used in book. The one world government has made them out to be people who are going to take everything away, and then everybody's going to starve. Whereas we know here in the 21st century that the opposite is actually the case. But by keeping people afraid, it keeps people in line.
Isn't that what they're doing right now with us, with Medicaid, Medicare, and so on and so forth?
We
have to cut back services so everyone can have services.
That's right. That's exactly right. But in the process, you actually kill people.
Well, it started, obviously, too. Not just that, but it started to just show you how we as conservatives in the Tea Party movement is so important. It started with the Republican Party scaring everybody. We have to do this. We have to do that. And capitalism has never collapsed on its own. It's always been imploded by when you slowly become more liberal and more liberal into a socialist or communistic type environment. Because if you see the Soviet Union went from communism to capitalism, and, you know, look where they're at, to where you see other countries, including ourselves, when government takes more and more of a role, these are the things that happen to your own country. And it's a combination of many things, not just one.
The biggest one I see is that from the founding times, what you had is you had a group of people that knew that industriousness was basically what invention included. So what they would do is they would invent something, then have to figure out a way to produce it. manufacture it, deliver it, and all of that. There's your capitalism.
All right, we got another call on the line.
That's what's missing now.
Toddy, we got another call on the line. Let me bring this person in. I think this is Doc Jones back. 770?
It's Tesla.
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, no, it's Doc.
I had to pee, so
oh,
I didn't worry about it.
What, for 45 minutes, Doc? 45 minutes to take a pee?
No, I've been on since then. No. Hey, you know what? What just came to mind to me with regard to the birth control issue and the Catholic Church and all that. Obama employs a great number of czars for a great many odd positions, and one of those people is his science czar. And it's well documented that Obama's science czar advocated not so long ago forced abortion, sterilization, as a means of population growth, solutions for population growth. And is it a coincidence here that Obama is touting the birth control solution in his healthcare policy? I'm just throwing it out there. I wonder, who we associate with tells a lot about who we are, what our values are, and so on. And I wonder if when Obama decided that he was going to employ a science czar, and he vetted his science czar, John Holdren, that, this is a like-minded guy. He believes that we should control the population through abortions, forced sterilization, or perhaps birth control. I wonder what the deal is. What is the motive behind controlling the number of babies being born? Even Obama himself said during a speech that he didn't want a situation to arise where his daughters are punished with a baby. Any thoughts?
I would say it's because liberalism is really about death. It's not about life. It's not about living. Conservatism is about living. We believe in protecting unborn babies. We want people free to live the reason they want to live, whereas the way they want to live, whereas liberalism is about death. Mm-hmm. And that's why where you see it, you will see people not living as long. You'll see violence. You'll see purges. You'll see torture. You'll see all that stuff because liberalism is about death.
All right. Question asked. Question answered. Thank you.
Well, that's very true, too, because if you think about it, our biggest stereotype, as we've had people who call in on this show and call Annie all kinds of names because she's a Tea Party or the media, whatever have you, is that who is the biggest genociders on the planet? It is those who are the liberal who really don't value life because they believe basically government should be controlling the life and controlling the population. And if you honestly think about what is a scary thought, if you really think about government in general, you would find a lot of Republicans as well as Democrats, Harry Reid, Mitch McConnell, Pelosi, Boxer, they would be more in line to adapt closer to what a communist government has than a true democracy, which we saw, say, under Calvin Coolidge.
Hey, even the Heritage Foundation at one point believed in the individual mandate. Back in the 90s, That's true. That's where you have a lot of conservatives at the time back in, this was supposed to be the alternative to Hillary care, was the Heritage Foundation came out with, well, we're not going to do Hillary care, but we could try this other method, and part of it was an individual mandate. And that's where actually Mitt Romney got his idea. Now, since then, the Heritage Foundation has gone back against that. They've disowned it. They said they were wrong and everything. It's Mitt Romney and others who are still hanging on to it really tight.
But one of the concerns I have in general about the healthcare, in general, and this is probably my non-conservative approach, is there needs to be some, we need to address this manner. Because what is happening is that 6 out of every 10 people are not paying these bills because they can't afford it, and it goes upon the four that can pay their bills. Does the hospitals and all them go without the money? No, of course not. It's passed on to us. So this must be addressed in some way, shape, or form, because a dime, or I think it's 90 cents of every dollar, is being compensated by some branch of the government through taxes in order to compensate these medical expenses that those who don't have can't carry. We must address it in some way. What is the answer? We know it's not Obamacare. But what is the answer? I don't know. And that's one of the things as conservatives, being a miser with taxpayer money, we have to address, because it costs us more in the long run not to ignore, or to ignore it. To just say, well, tough shit, they need to whatever. No, we need to address it, because if we don't, it costs us more money by just ignoring the problem.
Well, there was a time in our country where people, when people did pay for their own health care. And that was that time was before all these HMOs and everything came out in the late 60s, early 70s, which we were supposed to originally take care of this problem of some people having great health care and some people not having anything. And it was before that where most people, they just paid their doctor like they paid buying coffee, you know, and it's been this more government intrusion from the 60s into the 70s, into the 80s, into the 90s, that has created this problem, you know, and now we're looking to government to try to fix it again.
Well, the problem is we allowed government to walk into our lives. Instead of government being there to protect our way of life, instead we've allowed it to become our way of life, and that's the problem. Once we separate the fact that government is not our way of life and go back to leading our own lives, I think we can separate. We can return.
Well, and we also have to take under consideration that including the judicial branch has been compromised, and that also needs to be cleaned house. Are we under the impression that the legislative, I mean, and the executive are the only ones compromised? To say that a business has the same rights as a human being, that allows these billion-dollar corporations to do anything to people whatsoever. And it's not. The Constitution was written for we the people, for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Regardless of what kind of business mentality we have as conservatives, we have to understand that it is the American citizen that the Constitution is there to protect, not necessarily the trillion-dollar company that Republicans continue to worship, and not the Constitution.
Ed?
I'm not going to get too caught up in getting mad at corporations. I mean, we all know who the enemy is. We know the enemy is. We all know who the number one enemy is, and it's big government. You know, I don't have a fear of corporations. When I go to Starbucks, I don't walk in there in fear. When I walk into Walmart, I don't walk in there, you know, in fear. And more furthermore, when I'm an investor and I have mutual funds that are invested in corporations, I'm a stockholder in corporations. It shouldn't be that when I become a part of that I lose any of my rights. So I know people get caught up in that, but we just have to keep our eye on the ball, and it's government. It's big government.
Well, I think you made a good point there.
It's the corporation controlling the big government.
Not necessarily,
so,
Mike.
I don't believe that for a second.
I also agree on that one. If we vilify business in the way you want to, Mike, then free enterprise will completely disappear.
I'm not vilifying anything. But are you guys naive to believe when a company gives a person $1 million that they don't care what happens that politician is going to support against the Constitution? Come on. I mean, wake up. These people are being bribed. These people are being bribed.
Well, you're going to have
the donations of corporations are greatly outnumbered by all the donations that come in from individual people. In fact, it's not even close.
Well,
it's not even close. And the truth is, none of those donations kept the federal government off of Apple's back, off of Microsoft's back in the late 90s. None of all those donations that Walmart made has kept the government off their back when it comes to unions. And the Walmart is the largest employer in the world, and still that, you know, so I don't know how much power corporations have. I know they have some, but it's not enough to keep government out of their business. It sure as heck didn't help General Motors. You know, and were their union employees took it over. So how powerful was the corporation and all the shareholders?
It didn't help.
Not
Boeing.
Very.
It didn't help.
No,
you're going to have good businesses. You're going to have bad businesses. That's why laws exist, so that when a bad business shows up, you can then turn around and say you violated the law. And if there isn't a law, then there's public opinion, the public arena, and then you can vilify that business, saying we're not going to let people, you know, we're going to tell people not to shop there. We're not going to buy your products. We're not going to use you, and you're going to end up going out of business because you're a bad business. Let the free enterprise work, but free enterprise should not have the same statue as a human being. You know, a human beings, yes, run the business, allow them still to have their voices. You know, if my dues as a union payer is going to go to a politician I disagree with, then, hey, listen, my dues is not going to go there. You know, you have to let the human being be the highest level. And, you know, business is just something that supports the human
being. The reason corporations exist is because there were certain things that needed to be done that couldn't be done by individually wealthy people. They needed more money to create a product or a service than they had. So what they did, they find other people that want to invest in business, and you become an owner of business, and that's where corporations got started. They're needed. That's they just are. I know some people say, well, they shouldn't be.
I'm full in agreement with it. I think you're missing the point. I'm full in agreement with it. But when you purposely, knowingly, blatantly, and deliberately are poisoning people, and you guys say, well, you know, that's just going to go out of business. Well, what about the millions of people who have been purposely, knowingly, blatantly, and deliberately?
That's what the laws are for. Enforce the existing laws, then.
Not when you have the politicians limiting what you can do. And they're
then go after the politicians that are preventing you from enforcing those laws. If you're deliberately killing someone in your business, then you're guilty of murder and you should be charged with murder. If you're complacent in allowing those charges not to hit because you're a politician, then you should be tried as an accessory to the fact.
Yeah, well, you certainly should. But when all of them are like that, then, and you have a Supreme Court that basically says a business is basically a human being with constitutional rights, you have a problem there. And the bottom line is that, I mean, as the Constitution says, you know, we are endowed by our Creator, not our Constitution. A company, like it or not like it, as conservatives or Republicans, it is not endowed by the Creator. And that, my friends, trumps any of your individual stuck-on-Republican opinions that people should be crushed by big business. It's just
and I would say that people can't lose their rights by being involved in a corporation.
No, I'm not saying that. My whole point is we have to lose the philosophy that people are irrelevant. And, I mean, we as conservatives believe in the Constitution and think this way. But what has happened is that the Republicans have been purchased by, as the Dems with George Soros and all the other – I can't keep track of all the money. But, I mean, the bottom line is we have to stand by and stay steadfast and not allow just this huge takeover where the Democrats want government to take over and the GOP just wants the fat cats of the country club. We have to stand by our principles and take it back as individuals, because basically that the Constitution stands for we the people as individuals, not any company and not any branch of government.
Okay.
It's that simple. I mean, the Declaration is very clear on who holds the trump cards when it comes to rights, liberty, and the liberty and the pursuit of happiness.
Okay. You're listening here to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. You were down to our last 15 minutes here. Our guest is Ed Denzel, author of the book Govicide, Comply. It is a book that if you want to read, you can download it for free onto your iPad, your Kindle, or whatever you want to call it. There's a link here on the show page. Just go to the Denzel domain, click on that, and you can download the book for free. Want to welcome everyone, new people coming into the chat room. We've got Stay Mad Radio, David Graham. Welcome,
hey,
David. And
we've
got Jermaine in the house, too.
Yeah, hey. Andy, I'm going to be with Jermaine. I'm back with Jermaine on starting Monday. Also, LSU Conservative messaged me. They have 16 people listening to Ed. One person is going to buy the book, and they're all going to read it in the dorm room down at LSU. Of course, they're all drinking, as is normal, thanks to Annie, who has corrupted these young ladies. And they start their weekend at about 3 o'clock now, Ed.
Well, awesome. I don't drink at all, so I can't tell you how good the book is drunk, but I would look forward to somebody telling me what it's like when you're drunk.
But let me pick your brain a little bit, Ed. What's your favorite, what's your favorite cola or soda pop?
I don't drink soda.
Okay. What's your favorite juice?
I love orange juice, but haven't drank it for a while. Right now, I'm on a kick of diet iced tea or diet green tea from Publix my obsession is right now.
What's your favorite restaurant? Say fast food and sit down.
Oh, man. I'd have to say sushi. Good sushi really makes my day.
Not sashimi? I prefer sashimi.
No, I just like good old-fashioned, all-you-can-eat sushi, you know.
Do you drink beer?
No, I'm not a drinker. In fact, I haven't had any alcohol, except for like a wine tasting like 5 or 6 years ago. I haven't had any alcohol since the 90s.
Wow.
I've not drank in a while, too, not since they threw out the drunk who
just
threw
never got,
over
it's
me.
Not a, I'm not that – it's not a religious thing or anything. I just never got into it. I was just too busy doing other stuff.
Well, Ed, that's one thing on your book. You had near scotch. You didn't have any alcohol in your book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just once again, people cannot follow the one-word government if their brains are clouded.
I would think they would follow it more dearly if it was clouded because then they wouldn't think.
just a different of opinion, artistic differences there, I guess.
So how about, let's say, your favorite place to travel? If you could, place.
You know, I love Disney World. In fact, I used to live in Las Vegas. I just moved to Madeira Beach, Florida about 4 months ago. And even as a 40-some-year-old, I'm still, even though I write the serious book and everything, Disney World, every time I go there, is just the greatest experience. And I was just there with my sister and her husband like a week and a half ago.
Wow.
Disney World's not Disneyland.
You know what? I lived in Las Vegas for 13 years, and I never went to Disneyland. But they say once you've been to Disney World, Disneyland's a little bit of a letdown.
See, I've been to both.
Do you have a favorite politician currently holding office right now that you look to and think, I wish all of them were like that person?
You know, a guy that to me doesn't get enough attention, although when he ran and won, and he's a senator from my home state where I grew up in western Pennsylvania, and that's Pat Toomey.
Wow. Yeah, unsung hero
I think that everybody should keep an eye on him for the future.
Interesting.
Okay. How about a favorite sports team, say football?
There is only one team, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, geez. Annie, hang on.
I grew up in the cult. I only belong to one cult in my life, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
The Steelers.
See, now you got a Green Bay Packer here.
And you got a Chicago Bear over here. Here we go. Let the wars begin. How about, do you recycle as far as in your household?
No, I don't believe in recycling. And it's weird because in Nevada, they don't really follow it that well. But now I'm in Florida. They have like three different things outside for me to put stuff in. I don't follow it.
They have it here where I'm at, and they just the news camera just followed them. They dump it all in one place. They have like a bunch of different cylinders to put this in here, this in there, this in there. They all dump it in the same place.
No surprise to me at all.
In great state of South Carolina, we're allowed to burn our trash.
Yeah,
That's beautiful. I can remember in Pennsylvania growing up, we used to be able to start fires in our backyards for no reason to.
for no reason. How about your favorite president in history?
Well, of course, that would have to be Ronald Reagan, simply because I'm old enough to remember when he was in office. But I also am among the wave of people in the last couple years who've become more attracted to Calvin Coolidge, kind of a forgotten guy for a while, who's come back into favor in the last few years. So you can, you know, Ronald Reagan, Calvin Coolidge. I think it's too easy to say Abraham Lincoln, George Washington. You know, it's like calling a radio station and requesting AC/DC's "You Shook Me All Night Long." You know. So everybody says that, those presidents. But Calvin Coolidge would be second.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Speaking of that, how about your favorite? Like, what kind of music do you like? Like your favorite type music, not...
Well, you know, I'm a trained classical pianist, so I do love classical piano, you know, anything by Beethoven, the Sonata Pathetique, and I used to play that all the time. My mother was a piano teacher growing up, so that's how I learned. I also play the guitar, but being that I'm a child of the 80s, I love hair bands. You know, I know that there's a lot of... debauchery and stuff that went on with them, but I do appreciate the musicianship. So anyone tell you can catch me listen to Def Leppard and Whitesnake and the rest of them.
Now, I've got a question here. Since you said you were classically trained, very few people know that I used to play classical violin. What would
awesome.
Be your favorite classical piece? Because there's two I have.
Well, from a symphony point of view, I really love Solvay's song from Greg, and
mm-hmm.
that's from the musical Peter, you know, the opera musical Peter Gint.
Mm-hmm.
But from a piano playing point of view, I really love the Sonata Pathetique.
See, now for
and, me, I'm not going to try to sing it to you, you know, here. But if people heard it, they'd know it.
All right, for me, for performing a piece, I love to perform Brandenburg Concerto, the fifth movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then for listening, just to sit back and just feel it wash over you, is
mm-hmm.
Ravel's Bolero.
Thank
you.
Yes. Well,
wow,
the Republican Bo Derek would greatly appreciate that you like that song.
Now, we're down to our last nine
okay.
minutes here, Mike, and we still have Doc Jones on the line. Doc. Doc Jones?
Yeah, I like long walks on the beach. Mimosa in the morning, slow, deep kisses, and my favorite color is navy blue. And if I could be a tree, I'd be an oak tree.
Oh, that's funny. That's good.
I thought Doc was going to say a cherry tree. Hey, Doc Jones, what's your favorite fast food?
My favorite fast food is, Zaxby's. Oh, no! White Castle, of course.
You gotta get those Cali bombers.
Hamburgers, baby.
Yeah, well, of course.
Does Chipotle count as fast food? Chipotle, I love Chipotle.
Well, Doc, that counts as fast food. But Doc's a good Chicago man, so he likes the Bears, he likes the Cubs, and of course, he likes White Castle. So, Ed, how about your favorite authors? You're a writer yourself. Who were your influences when you were young?
Well, Ayn Rand is up there. I'd like to think that I wrote this book in the same kind of idea that Ayn Rand had, which she wrote Atlas Shrugged. Of course, I love The Fountainhead, but I really love some of her nonfiction stuff, too. Tom Clancy, of course, he got popular when I was growing up. I've read all of those older books like Red Storm Rising and Debt of Honor and all those. My favorite movie, one of my favorite movies, is The Hunt for Red October. So I'd put those guys in there. But and any time you could catch me reading Mark Twain. I just finished Huckleberry Finn here recently. So I like some classics, too.
Well, you know what? I'm going to make a suggestion. If you haven't read this, Herman Melville put out a book called White Jacket. And that was what the Navy used to reform the U.S. Navy naval penal system, disciplinary system and their stuff, which Doc Jones can attest to. And listen, we're down to our last 7 minutes, Mike, so we got to wrap this up. I want to thank Ed for being our guest. He's welcome back anytime he'd like to come on. We've had a fantastic chat room going on here, which has been lively all day, and I imagine we're going to have about 50 pages to print out when we're done. I want to thank everyone that did call in. We had a great, great roundtable, and we had absolutely some couple of wonderful guests calling in from CPAC floor. I hope that you all join us again next week. And guess what, Mike? Who's coming back on Tuesday? One of your favorite guests.
One of my favorites.
Andrew Ian Dodge.
Oh, my man. Oh,
Andrew Ian Dodge, who is running up against Olympia Snow, trying for the Senate seat in Maine.
In Maine. There are some great Republicans running for U.S. Senate around this country who are very active on Blog Talk Radio, and we have to get them elected. I mean, from Ohio to Arizona to Maine to my state of Michigan, I mean, there are just many other little people like us. We must get elected, because the more we elect of the conservative voice is the more this country turns in the direction we once loved and cherished very much. That if we don't take control of now, it may be pretty impossible to do a week from now. But anyway, thanks again, Ed. God, to have you for all this time. It's just
great. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for giving attention to my book, and I will be listening. And yes, I'd love to come on again sometime.
Well, all right, great. Maybe you can join us Tuesday, Valentine's Day, when Andrew Ian Dodge comes back on, and you can join the conversation with us. You know,
now that you're a celebrity, Annie, everyone wants to come on. Now that I don't think you guys know, Annie's on ABC Public Broadcasting. She was quoted in Al Jazeera. So, you know, maybe even our guests need autographs from our own host.
Oh, man. I want to thank everyone for listening in. It has been a fantastic 3 hours. I didn't know if I was going to make it the whole 3 hours because, like I said, I am still battling this bronchitis, so occasionally you hear me doing a little whimpering in the background here. But we made it.
Great show.
We've had a blast, and I do ask you to join us again on Tuesday on Valentine's Day. It's going to be Feel the Love. We're going to get Andrew Ian Dodge back on, see if we can get a money bomb going for him, help him with his campaign, and get Olympia Snow, that rhino, out of the Senate. And following Friday, we're going to have Frank Salvato from the Basics Project. So we're going to have an exciting week coming up.
Annie, I have a message here real quick from her LSU conservative. Tell Annie with her bronchitis to do 2 shots of tequila and snort whiskey 100 proof up her nose. It cures everything and helps you study for exams as well. There you go, Annie. Take them from the children.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I think I hear a bottle of scotch calling me right now.
Okay. Oh, God. All righty, everybody. This has been great. Annie, get well and rest yourself. Doc Jones, Ed, absolutely everybody. I'm disappointed Jermaine didn't call in, but keep in mind, I will. I go back on the GGT Conservative Primetime, 11:30 on Monday, and I will be back on Tuesday at 2 at Annie's right hand, as always.
Yeah, and Tesla has a show going on tonight. Socialism is not an option. He's got his weekend shows lined up for this weekend. Check out Tesla. I'm sure Stay Mad Radio, he's going to be on 2020 Radio. So check out David Graham over on Stay Mad Radio. And, of course, Jermaine with Cool Mike coming up. So I want to thank everyone for listening in. I hope you have a happy, healthy, and safe weekend. And I will see you next week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
See you. Bye-bye.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Every time, yes, you can count on me.
I've got the backbone. American, I've got the heart. American, I've got the will. American, will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.